Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, October 29th, 2017. This is episode 1435. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LegalZoom. Keep your business moving forward and let LegalZoom help out with the legal stuff. For special savings, visit LegalZoom.com and enter Tech Guy in the referral box at checkout. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, trying to help you with your technology, saving the world one computer at a time. 8888 Ask Leo, my phone number. We talk about anything with a chip in it. That would be, of course, computers. Do any of you still have them, computers? They seem to be phasing out, aren't they? We have the computers in our pockets. That's really the computers we use these days, the smartphones. Some of them are wearing computers on our wrists. Those are the real addicts. You got computers in your microwave. You got computers in your refrigerator, your television. They're all over the place. And they're all connected via the internet. So I'll talk about any of that stuff. 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area. Simple enough. You just use Skype out or some other VoIP product to call that toll-free number. Shouldn't cost you anything. 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Well, let's see. People are asking me, do you still recommend the Google Pixel 2 now, given the problems it seems to be having? We're in an interesting kind of state in the smartphone industry, where the smartphones got to the point where there really wasn't much different they could do, right? So they have to innovate in new and in interesting ways. Apple takes out the headphone jack. Innovation. The newest of thing, of course, is to make the screen stretch all the way to the edge. But that poses interesting issues because those bezels on a smartphone have cameras. They have fingerprint readers. We have to get rid of those or make notches in the screen, which Apple's chosen to do, to make room for the cameras. And what's happening, and we've seen this in other areas of technology before, is companies are pushing. They're pushing harder to get some new feature in there that you're going to want. And sometimes push comes to shove, as they say, or you push a little too hard. The obvious example is last year's Samsung Galaxy Note 7, where they tried to get a lot of battery in there, a little extra battery in there. But it turned out that was a bad idea because they exploded. So the new Samsung Note 8 has a little bit smaller battery in there. But they're still trying to, get more features. And Google, with its Pixel 2 XL, the big phone, is using an OLED screen from LG Electronics. Only two companies in the world, at least two big companies, companies that can make it in the quantities that Google and Apple would need, or Samsung, make OLED screens for phones. That would be Samsung is number one. That's the screen Apple's using. And I think Google's using a Samsung screen for its little Pixel 2. And then LG is the other company. They make screens. Of course, they make beautiful OLED TVs. I have an LG OLED TV. It's OLED TV. It's marvelous. Widely agreed to be the best 4K TV out there. But LG's phone screens are being made in an older factory. Because remember, the quantity they have to produce, the tens of millions they have to produce, requires a fairly mature factory that has, the capacity. And so they're making it an older factory. And there seem to be some issues with these LG screens that Google chose. LG uses the same screen in its new phone, the V30. So the first complaint people have for both the V30 and Google's Pixel 2 XL is that it's kind of pebbly. It's a grainy appearance, especially as it gets dimmer. And I've looked at them. I went over to Verizon, the only place I could find one. And I don't notice the grain so much. I mentioned this before. But now the new problem that's cropped up is a bigger problem. And it's a problem all OLED screens are subject to called burn-in. Now, you remember burn-in from the plasma days. If you had a plasma TV, remember plasma TVs? They're gone now. How did that happen? They were the hot thing, but 20 years ago. Anyway, in fact, I remember the TV channel I used to work for, Tech TV. We bought a bunch of plasmas because we were Tech TV. We're the have to have the latest greatest. Plus, we were spending Paul Allen's money, the Microsoft billionaire. So these were $10,000 55-inch displays. They were really expensive, and we bought a bunch of them. And what did we put on them? Well, we put Tech TV on. And, of course, after a while, the Tech TV logo, which was in the lower right of the screen at all times, burned into those screens. And even if you weren't watching anything, you'd see it. Or you're watching All My Children, you'd see a Tech TV logo burned in on that screen. And you couldn't get rid of it. It was permanent. Plasmas, somewhat fixed that problem over time. OLEDs are somewhat less, but still susceptible to burn-in. OLED screen... companies that use OLED screens do a variety of things. I'm told Samsung, which of course puts OLED screens in its Galaxy S8 and its Note 8, they've been using OLEDs for a long time. They make the best Super AMOLED screens. Samsung, I'm told, jitters the. That sounds bad if I say that. How can I say this without sounding bad? It stutters. No, that's worse. It subtly moves the screen by one pixel every once in a while, just because there's elements of the screen on an Android phone that just don't ever change. Chiefly the buttons at the bottom, the back, home, and recents button. So Samsung, to avoid burn-in, and no one's, to my knowledge, ever reported burn-in on a Samsung phone. They just, every once in a while, they'll move the screen a pixel left and then a pixel right. You wouldn't notice it. In fact, I didn't know it was doing it until somebody told me. But it saves the burn-in, apparently. Did Google not do that, or did they get defective screens? I don't know. But I've talked to people now who opened the box, a brand new Pixel 2 XL, turned on the phone, and there's burn-in of the back, recent, and home button already. They haven't even used it. They probably got burned into the factory. I mean, I presume at the factory they test the screen, but it can't have been on for that long. If the screen's getting burnt in within hours or days of its arrival, that's really bad. Google at first kind of said, no, what? And now they're saying, yeah. I talked to a person yesterday who he's on his third Pixel 2 XL. And Google is now acknowledging it, saying we're investigating it. They asked for his serial number on his phone so that they could figure out what factory and what batch the screens came from. Maybe, with luck, it'll be a particular batch. Could be a bigger problem, though. Could be a big problem. Google hopes, I think, that they can put a software update out. This seems unlikely, but maybe they'll do something like Samsung. So the question is, do I recommend the Pixel phones? And I do. I love the Pixel phones, because they're really well designed. The little ones built by HTC. The big ones built by LG. They're really nice phones. The little problem with the little one is, it's not a bezel-free design. It has, but they have front-facing speakers, so there's some frame at the top and the bottom, ears to accommodate those. The beautiful phone, the phone I ordered, is the Pixel 2 XL. That doesn't have any of those ears, just a little bit at the top and the bottom. And well, we'll see. I hope Google can fix it. They've extended their warranty from 1 year to 2 years. That's not going to really help anything if they can't make a phone that doesn't have this problem. The reason I recommend the Google phones, and I guess I still do, is because they're the safest Android phones out there. Because you're buying it from Google, or you're buying it from Verizon, who bought it from Google, you're guaranteed updates. Google is now doing, as Microsoft does, a monthly security update every month for Android. And you know what? Android needs it. Not all manufacturers do it, and none of them are as fast as Google. Google's promised updates for 3 years on these phones. I think I can live with the burn-in, to be honest. To me, having the secure phone is more important. And if you can still get the small Pixel, if you're worried about burning it, those don't have, there's no reported problems with those. I do miss that headphone jack, though. They don't have headphone jacks. 8888, ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Google says in its tests, its XL is no worse than any other phone.
You've heard me talk about Epson.
Which is not really confidence building. Our investigation, let's go to the Google Pixel support forums, shall we? This is Google's statement from Mario Cairo. We're very confident the Pixel 2 delivers an exceptional to give users peace of mind. Every Pixel 2 and 2 XL will come with a 2-year warranty worldwide. There's a lot of sales stuff in here. That's really annoying. Since launch, we've also received reports of suspected issues related to the Pixel 2 XL display. We take these reports very seriously. Wanted to provide an update. First, there's been some feedback for the display's not appearing as vibrant as other phones. And in the past few days, there have been a small number of reports of differential aging. Also, it's differential aging, my friend. You mean burn-in? Yeah, burn-in. Yeah, on the Pixel 2's P-OLED screen, on the topic of color saturation. Okay, first of all, they say we're more accurate. That's why it looks less saturated. But I have to point out that Apple's been making color calibrated displays for several years now, and nobody's complained about them being less saturated. So I'm not sure I buy that. So they're gonna put in a feature you can turn up the saturation. I think the issue, and I've seen other posts in this regard, other posts, is not that they're desaturated, but they're not calibrated. Google says we calibrate each phone at the factory, but apparently at least the initial phones weren't. Regarding differential aging, we test and test and test. We know our current investigation of burn-in, which started as soon as we received the first user report, confirms differential aging is in line with other premium smartphones and should not affect the day-to-day experience of the Pixel. But these, you know, mealy-mouthed BS. Excuse me. Regardless, we use software to safeguard the user experience and maximize the OLED life. We'll be making ongoing software updates to optimize further. Yeah, right. Not satisfying. Not a good answer. But I didn't cancel my order. I'm hoping beyond hope, but one of the reasons I get these phones and I'm not canceling it is because I review them for you, right? So I will let you know. Mine comes in 2 weeks. So a little more, 2.5 weeks. I still recommend them, but maybe I shouldn't. The Note 8's looking better and better. Problem with the Note 8, and I think that, let me just check my Note 8. I don't think that the security updates are quite as fast as Google. They are doing them, though. I think I'm still in September. No, that's bad. August. So it's 2 security updates behind. That's not good. Let's see. Maybe there's an update. Let's check. Last checked 10/28/0. Checked it last night. Nope. So August. That's not good. It's hard to recommend a phone that isn't patched for crack, for instance. K-R-A-C-K. Which this is not. Good. You've had good results in the XL. Okay. I wish I had mine sooner, but I got it as quickly as I could. The Munsters theme, sort of. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, isn't it? Yeah. You're playing the actual Munsters theme. I thought this was the rap song that sampled the Munsters theme that came out a few years ago. But I'm wrong. This is the actual entire Munsters theme. I guess I'm thinking Halloween music from Michael Kozier, our musical director. All day today. Happy Halloween. I guess I should say happy Halloween. Look who's there. She's dressed in Halloween finery.
Burke's ill-fitting ringmaster.
Oh, you're a ringmaster. I thought you were a drum major. I like it. I like it. Yeah. So happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
You're trick-or-treating later today? No.
No. I did that last night.
No. Did you?
Yeah, we had a little neighborhood block party. It was
fun.
Cute.
I think that's a good idea.
The kids got Jell-O brains and the adults got Jell-O shots.
Oh, that's perfect. Now I want to go to your block.
Yeah, and there was a garage band and all the houses were decked out. It was awesome.
See, that's a happy, that's not a spooky Halloween,
no,
that's a happy Halloween.
There was some spookiness.
Yeah, minorly spooky, right?
Watching the little kids in their costumes was adorable.
I watched 3 episodes of Stranger Things last night with the lights turned out, and I'm spooked.
You're spooked.
I'm spooked. That is some scary stuff.
I watched a couple episodes I watched a couple episodes of the first season.
Oh, you didn't like it?
I fell off.
Heresy.
So I need to go back.
Good. You're in luck. So a reason I'm talking to Kim Schaffer, besides the fact that I totally enjoy talking to Kim Schaffer, is she has been slaving hard over the phones all morning, preparing people for the show, and you have a nice array of them, I see.
Again, a panel.
A panel. Is that what we call callers? What is the collective noun for callers? A panel of callers?
No,
panels.
No,
we need something more colorful. We need something long, a panel of long-time listeners, first-time callers.
First-time callers.
How about that?
Not always first-time, though.
No. Who should I start with?
Craig in Frederick, Maryland, is right on theme with what you were just talking about with the Pixel 2. He's had one for 2 weeks and was going
to
give you his
I'd like
assessment.
To get his... Oh, I'd love to.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kim. Good call. Hello, Mr. Craig from Frederick, Maryland. How is your pick? Did you get the big one or the little one?
I got the XL2, sir, and I also enjoy talking to Kim.
Yes. It's kind of the highlight of my morning.
But first, I wanted to give you props, if you don't mind me giving you 15 seconds of kudos, is that I, out of all the reviewers, I follow a lot of tech news myself, and I like that you purchase the items. They're not given to you, and that's how you do your reviews. So that way, I feel that you give a much unbiased opinion or review of the items.
But I'm late to the table.
That.
Like here, I bought it as fast as I could. My little feet could carry me. I bought it during the Google event, and I'm still not getting it till the 17th.
You kind of remind me of Consumer Reports because
they do the same thing.
So I do appreciate that you do that. So
that's my inspiration. I'll tell you, and I'll just tell you a little anecdote of why I think that's important. The Essential phone, which came out earlier this year, a lot of reviewers got pre-production units, and most of the reviews, in fact, all the reviews I read were of units that were provided by Essential, but weren't the final units. Reviewers complained that the camera app was terrible, crashed, and was buggy. When I got mine, first thing I do, of course, and I bought it, was to launch the camera, and sure enough, it crashed the phone. I thought, oh, the reviewers were right. But within a few days, fixes were pushed out, and the camera app now is flawless. In fact, it's a beautiful phone, and now that they've dropped the price $200 to $500, it is probably one of the phones I'd recommend in the mid-price range for Android, but you won't see that anywhere because the reviewers have, of course, moved on. When you buy a phone, you don't move on quite so fast. When you spend $800 on a phone, you might continue to use it for a little longer. So I feel bad for Essential because no one's going to, you know, the word will not go out. The Essential phone is now a very good choice, and it's a shame. I think it's one of the reasons they had to cut the price by $200 because nobody was buying it. Anyway.
Well, and I think that leads to my question with you about reviewers. I've had it. I had it launch day, and I called a couple weeks ago and told you I was getting it. I got it immediately, and just as background, I purchased directly from Google because I'm a T-Mobile customer, so I'm just taking my SIM
card. That's what I'm doing, too, yeah. I'm a Google Fi customer. You'd think I would have gotten it faster. I subscribe to Google's own. Oh, well. It's, you know, I don't know how they allocate these, but that's fine.
And I had a previous Pixel XL. The upgrade process took me 10 minutes. It was the most enjoyable process I've ever do. You hook the two cables. It moved everything over. I was done. The same screen layouts that I had on my previous phone were moved over. I had to do no setups. It was the most enjoyable process for an upgrade I've ever done.
They've got this down now, you know, and I think all the phones are very good at this now. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the best experience I've had. So then, of course, several days later, I start seeing all the reports. I do have the blue shift, but I had that on my old phone as well. I did the upgrade process. But I'm not getting the burn-in. And the blotchy part, I didn't have that because I like using a black background to save on battery, whether that still works or not. That's a long time thing I've always done. Less light, I would.
Yeah, you don't have to do it on OLEDs anymore because they don't turn on all the pixels anymore. LCDs did.
That's my old school thing.
Old school. That's fine. But I like a black. I like dark backgrounds because it's easier on the eyes too. I don't like bright white.
Yeah. So I never got the blotchy thing when you pull down the app tray of an all-white background.
Yeah.
Now, the blotchy thing actually showed up when I tried the Microsoft Launcher, which is a whole different thing. It would give me a daily wallpaper of the day. And that's where I started noticing the blotchy. I'm like, well, the blotchy is actually the tray. And when you make a phone call, they've added a slight transparency to that. So if you move the tray up and down, you're actually seeing some of the wallpaper
and that's where you'll see the graininess. Yeah.
But
who cares? To me, that's not a deal breaker at all.
No. And let me tell you, in the color thing, I'm actually enjoying it more because I would tend on my other phones, like an old Samsung, it would be so vivid, I would alter the colors to be even more vivid or put that pop in there. And that person looking on the computer, I'm like, oh, man, I really oversaturated because it wasn't true color.
As we use phones more and more for photography, I think it's important that they be true color, frankly.
So anyway, after having it over this time period, I'm not getting the burn-in. And I did notice when I did the upgrade, there was a slight burn-in from my original Pixel XL.
Yeah.
When it was doing transfer, when the all-white screen showed up, I saw those little buttons.
Oh, I'll have to look at my original Pixel XL because I've been using it now for a year. Huh.
And that was the only time I saw it. But on this one, I keep working every week, and I still don't see it.
So well, that's part of the problem with this is, you know, these are sharp-eyed Pixel peepers. Who are on Reddit and other forums. They're the really, you know, avid fans, and they're going to see stuff and imperfections. And this has always been the case that a normal user won't see. There's an issue that a lot of people have with LCD screens called screen bleed, where you see it's a little brighter around the edges from the backlight. Right. And a lot of people hate that. They just hate that. It never has bothered me. I've seen it. I've been using LCD screens for years. And of course, early LCD screens were terrible for that. So I just got used to it and it doesn't bother me.
And the last thing is, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No,
I have my screen dim after 30 seconds. That's how I have. So I don't leave mine on all the time. So maybe that's the other thing.
Yeah.
So I'm just really looking forward to you getting your
we'll see. Some people are reporting it. Some people are reporting it after a few weeks.
Yeah.
Thank you for the kind words, Craig. And I'm not sure if this is going to matter to people or not. But Google seems to be at least paying attention. We'll see now if they fix it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's an interesting debate. And I'm glad to hear that yours is okay, Craig.
Well, I appreciate your time taking the call. But reviewers, you know, like you just said, the reviewers have slammed it so much. When I was on an airplane the other day, the guy said, oh, that's the phone with burn-in. So that's
right.
What people have now heard. Yeah. And so, like you said, if anybody comes out with anything better later on, the damage has already been done.
I think reviewers a little bit revel in their power to make or break a phone. And they're a little too anxious maybe to break a phone.
Yeah.
And admittedly, it's an expensive phone, so it shouldn't have imperfections.
Well, I've been enjoying it. I think it's been
a
great upgrade. It fixed all the items I didn't like in the previous XL. And I know it sounds like a fanboy thing, but I actually use mine a lot for work and travel. And it's been a great phone. Other than the headphone thing, I'm still trying to get used to
that. I miss that headphone.
It's driving me nuts.
I know. And the Pixel Buds aren't out till later next month. Do you get black? What color did you get?
I just got the black one.
Yeah, I think that's why I got Panda. You know, I got the black and white with the orange button. And I think that's why I'm not getting it right away.
And here's the other thing. I have that Daydream, which I really don't like because I have a Vive in the Oculus.
Yeah, I don't use the Daydream.
Those speakers on the outside, when you put it in the visor, actually sound so much better using Daydream because you get that stereo sound.
Yeah. That's a good idea. Yeah, but I'm not a big fan of VR anymore. I've lost.
I hate it.
You have the Vive, and you still and you. Oh, yeah.
It actually kind of sits here if you're.
Yeah, mine does too. So. Yeah.
I agree with you. Anyway, I appreciate your time.
It's expensive.
I won't hold
it's
up, but,
expensive being an early adopter.
I can't wait to get your review.
Thanks, Craig. I will let you know in about two or three weeks. Take care, Craig. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that. Chris, that wasn't the screensavers. That was way back in the early days of Twit. You're talking about Mike Arrington. You can still see that on YouTube. Yeah, some people remember that moment. I used to host the Gilmore Gang for Steve Gilmore, and I love Gilmore and the Gilmore Gang, but Steve always wanted it to be a very rough shot and rough and tumble show, and I guess I could kind of live with that. But the straw that broke the camel's back was when Mike Arrington, we were talking about the new Palm Pre, which had just come out. And I was very impressed with WebOS. The Pre had other issues, mostly that it was underpowered to run WebOS. But I was very impressed with it. And I said, you know, this is a better phone than people are giving it credit for. And Arrington got upset because he couldn't get one to review. And he said, did you get a review unit? His position, which he clearly communicated, maybe not exactly verbally, but it was very clear what his position was, is that people who got review units were praising the Palm Pre because they got review units. And I was mortally offended because I, you know, take my ethical standards seriously, perhaps more seriously than I should. But I do take them seriously, and so I felt like he had insulted me. So that's the famous F.U. Mike Arrington incident. And that was the last Gilmore Gang we ever did. But as it turned out, apparently a lot of Mike was one of those people who was very, very, very powerful at the time because he founded TechCrunch and ran it. And nobody was willing to say F.U. Mike Arrington to him, to his face. And I got so many emails from entrepreneurs and others who wanted to say that, but we're too afraid to say that. And but I lost my cool. I mean, and I called him the same day and apologized. And what you don't see on YouTube is that we came back and finished the show after my apology. But yeah, the Palm Pre was a very sad story. You can still get the WebOS in some TV has it. I forget which one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Actually, I love Google's – I don't love. I laugh at Google's response to the Pixel 2 XL burn-in issue. They said, what we call that, we don't call that burn-in. The term they use is differential aging. Well, burn-in has a bad connotation. Differential aging just confuses people. What they're trying to say, or what the euphemism is, that parts of the screen are aging faster than other parts, differential aging. But everybody else knows it as burn-in. I guess it's not inaccurate to call it differential aging, but I think it obscures the problem. And, you know, they don't disagree that it's happening, but they say it's in line with other premium smartphones and should not affect the normal day-to-day experience. Nobody's denying that it affects the day-to-day experience. Or nobody's asserting that it affects the day-to-day experience. I mean, you know, it's a faint burn-in. It's not a big black dot on your screen. But if you're watching a movie and you still see the kind of ghost on the right of the home button, that's not ideal, especially for a premium-priced phone. So I think people's complaint is reasonable. I don't know if it would bother me or not. I will let you know when I get the phone. But it'll be interesting to see if Google can figure it out. Maybe it's a particular batch of OLED screens, or maybe, you know, LG does have a more modern factory coming online to make these OLED screens. Maybe that'll solve the problem. But Google says, well, you know, as with any big company, and this is VP Product Management for Google Hardware, Mario Quiroz, who says, we're confident the Pixel 2 delivers an exceptional smartphone experience, and to give users a peace of mind, we're doubling the warranty. Okay, well, that's kind of an acknowledgement. Regardless, we use software to safeguard the user experience and maximize the life of the OLED display. We will make ongoing software updates to optimize further. So maybe they can figure it out and make it better. If they do, it probably is a very good choice for the phone. If you can live with the missing headphone jack, which I'm not crazy about. I have to say, at this point, the Note 8 looks like the phone to get. But I was just checking my Note 8. Very disappointing. It doesn't have the last 2 months of Android patches, the security updates. My Note 8 anyway, which is, I think it's an unlocked Note 8, only goes through August. That means it doesn't have the September or October patches. And of course, a very important patch is coming to Android devices in the next week or two. probably for the November update, to fix the crack exploit, which is a serious flaw in the way a Wi-Fi works and could impact your privacy on a Wi-Fi network. This is, but there are other important patches too. I mean, there's lots of them, and missing, you know, 2 months behind is not a good thing either. On the other hand, Samsung has certainly figured out how to make an OLED display pop, look good without burn-in. I love it. It has a headphone jack. It has a stylus. It's got wireless charging, which the new Google phones lack. So if you feel like, well, I'm not confident that the Google XL, 2XL's problems will be solved, and you want a headphone jack, which certainly I do, then a Note 8 is a very good choice. There are other good phones out there too. Yeah, somebody in the chat room is pointing out this. It's Microsoft's probably kicking themselves now for getting out of the phone business. It's an opportunity. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's go to Chip, Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Hi, Chip.
Hi, Leo.
Yes, hello. Welcome.
Hi. I'm trying to go. This weekend, iHeartRadio launched their free app weekend, and so what happened was, I listened to all these stations on my squeeze box, Logitech squeeze box.
Love those squeeze boxes, yeah.
Yeah. When they launched, it started about a month ago, gradually, and I started losing stations.
Oh, man.
And when they completely, I lost everything. I lost about 1,000 stations on iHeartRadio.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah, see, this is we're kind of in this new stage in streaming radio. So radio stations love the idea of you listening, right? But they don't like the idea of people, because everybody who listens to a radio station, whether it's via iHeartRadio or the station directly, uses bandwidth. And, of course, that ultimately that costs money, whether it costs money to Clear Channel, who runs iHeartRadio, or it costs money to the individual station. Somebody's paying for every single second you listen costs them money. So while they love it that you're listening, it is a different model. It's a different financial model from the one they're used to. When a radio station puts up a tower, fires up a transmitter, it doesn't cost them more if one person listens or a million people listen. It doesn't, the cost literally changes not at all. So broadcasting has an interesting model. You put a lot of money in up front. It's very expensive up front, but you want to be more successful. The more people listen, the better. The more you can charge your advertisers, the more money you'll make. There's no negative. Streaming internet radio is a little bit more like magazine or newspaper publishing, where there's a cost to providing that magazine. Magazine publishers are very careful about controlling circulation, for instance. You could put a magazine out of business by tripling the subscription, the number of subscriptions, because all of a sudden they have to print those magazines. It costs them a lot of money. So magazine publishers are very careful to keep the subscription level from expanding too fast. It's a weird model for radio people. They go, what do you mean you don't want more readers? Well, we don't, because we can't afford them. So all of a sudden radio, when they first started streaming, they got these big bills and they said, wait, what? It's costing more? What? And here's what really irks them. People who are listening to the station outside of the station's what they call area of dominant influence, or ADI. So they charge advertisers for the number of people listening locally. But Joe's Crab Shack down the block doesn't care if somebody's listening across the country or overseas. They're not potential customers. And so the radio station can't make money on international customers, can't make money on customers across the country. And they're losing money for each of those. So they really kind of trying to control it tightly. One of the things that, you know, you're seeing is internet radios like the Logitech Squeezebox. There are a lot of these. I love these. Basically, are little computers that are using known links. I'm sure the Logitech uses, as most of these do, a system called Receiva. And if you haven't been to the Receiva site, you should probably go take a look at that. Receiva Internet Radio. It's an internet radio directory. You don't have to use the Receiva app. These internet radios have it kind of built in. But you can create an account there and log in and then add stations, see what stations there are. And Receiva as a directory keeps track of the information that a program or a uses or a device like the Logitech Squeezebox uses to hear the stream. It's basically a URL. It's an internet address, just like a website address, but it's an internet address to the endpoint for the audio. If radio stations, and it sounds like this is what happens, you know, the Clear Channel, which owns, you know, is probably the largest radio group in the country, and I should say, as a disclaimer, they also own the syndicator of this show, and many of the stations, probably most of the stations carrying the show are Clear Channel stations, decided to do this iHeartRadio app as a way to get their stations in front of people and to control costs, etc. They may have decided, I don't know, I don't have connections inside of the boardroom there, but they may have decided, well, we need to have everybody use our app. This is not unfamiliar. This has happened before with others. You know, CBS did the same thing, CBS Radio. You have to have people use our app. We can't let them use internet radio stations. What I would suggest is go to receiver or whatever directory your Logitech uses and make sure it's up to date with the latest URLs, the latest endpoints for all the channels you listen to. Update that. Update your radio and cross your fingers. But there is no guarantee that every station will be available. In fact, right now, it's not. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So let me log in. You know, I haven't used an internet radio in so long. Effectively, though, you know, I do use internet radio because I listen on my Sonos and my Amazon Echo. Let me log in to my Receiva account and see. So, oh, now they want to charge, do they? Make the most of your radio by activating additional features, personal. So let's add a station. So you can, this is interesting. So let's say KFI, and I don't know the, oh, this is adding a station to the directory. Now let me search for a station, KFI. KFI search. Okay, there's a lot of KFIs, but not the KFI. Isn't that interesting? So there you go. That's a Clear Channel station. I bet you that's what's happening. That's interesting. Can't find the station. Let's click to add it. KFI. The URL. I don't know the stream URL, although maybe if you go to KFIAM640.com, we can deduce it from the... Oh, look, Leo's on. I love that guy. We can deduce it. Yeah, I wonder if the All Access Free Preview Weekend has something to do with this. Like, you know, this is really... this is the problem. So here's KFI's audio. Actually, the problem with KFI's audio right now, I think it's got the Chargers game on it. Let's see. I'd have to... change the sound settings. Oh, no, it's me. Hello, KFI. So they're listening, so that's good. You have to mention OO Tunes. I forgot to mention it yesterday. So let's see how we can figure out. You could probably figure out the URL if you look at the source code. But let's go back to Receiva. And say, I don't know the URL. Let's see if Receiva can figure it out. match unfound. Yeah, see, so I think that's part of the problem is, at this point, probably all the Clear Channel stations are doing this. So that's, okay, there we go. So there's the iHeart. Let's try that. Copy selected link. Autoplay. Yeah, that looks like that might work. Let's try that. Seems to be a problem with that station. Yeah, I think they're blocking it. So, but OO Radio. Now, whether this will continue to last, I don't know, right? The problem is his box. Is it 00 Radio? Problem is his box. OO Radio. Here we go. OO Tunes. This, you know, I'm not sure I want to mention it on the air. Okay, because ask not for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. Leo Laporte. the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Chat room's recommending another app. Now, this isn't going to probably help you with your Logitech squeeze box, which is an internet radio. There are, and we've talked about internet radios before. I looked at Receiva. My suspicion is Clear Channel is blocking these internet radios, that they want you to use their iHeartRadio app. We are, in fact, on our mothership, KFI is currently broadcasting the LA Chargers, the brand new LA Chargers football game, but streaming the show on iHeartRadio. So there would be an example of why you'd want to listen. You're going to have to get the iHeartRadio app and listen on your phone. I imagine the revenue model for internet radios is kind of cratering as a result of this, because you can't guarantee when we first got internet radios, these are, you know, like tableside radios, like your clock radio. When we first got them, they were clock radios that got every station in the world because everybody was available. But that's slowly been ratcheted down, and now I think many radio companies want you to use their app. But the good news is you don't really need an internet radio anymore, because you have a device that you carry around with you all the time that is connected to the internet, that you can have the app. So you could have the CBS radio app or the iHeartRadio app and get any station you want through that. So I guess that's really the way they want you to do it. And, of course, they monetize by you, with the app. They can figure out where you're listening, and they can play an ad that's appropriate to you and so forth. They can make it more useful for them. They could show an ad on the screen. An app is, you can monetize, and you charge. Ultimately, that's the long range way to make it financially feasible. You got to understand, radio stations are businesses, and it's a tough business, and they can't afford to have thousands or tens of thousands of people listening, costing the money, who don't make the money. So they have to find ways to monetize that. I understand that. Chat room's mentioning an app that probably won't be out very long. as soon as I mention it on the radio, OOTunes. It's OOTunes Radio. It is a newer radio app that does seem for iOS, and does seem to get a lot of stations that the other apps don't. How long that will last, I don't know. But you can check it out at OOTunes.com, and you can see which stations it gets in and all of that. We'll put that in the show notes, TechGuyLabs.com. George Santa Monica's next. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, George.
Good morning, Leo.
Good morning.
Yesterday you were talking to somebody about Vizio and how he enjoyed the new product whatever. And I want to tell you a story that happened to me. I was cleaning my house about 2 weeks ago, doing the floors and the dishes. I went in to take the stuff out of the laundry in the dryer, and I noticed a battery in there.
Uh-oh.
I said, that's a AAA battery.
That's a bad sign, isn't it?
Yeah, so I started taking stuff out of the dryer.
Uh-oh.
And I found some earphones in there.
Oh, no.
And I go, oh, no. So I kept going through my stuff, and I found my Sony radio.
You laundered, you not only did you launder your Sony radio, you put it in the dryer, too.
It was a double wash, double rinse, 40 minutes in the dryer. I put the battery back in the radio, and it started playing. It's a miracle radio.
It's a miracle.
I called Sony right away and told them the story and how I appreciated they made such a good product that worked, and I think it needs to be recognized.
You bet. So
when people get good products, we don't want to keep hearing you talk about stuff that doesn't work.
How about stuff that does work? I agree.
That's right. I love this.
I agree, George.
Yeah.
Now, I have to point out that this is not recommended use for that radio.
No, I know.
And Sony does not guarantee it against double wash, double dry. But it's good you dried it before you tried to use it. Because, in fact, I'm amazed the batteries survived even. Because if it had any moisture in there, that's when you get in trouble. So water in a device isn't necessarily going to harm the device unless it gets powered and then it can short circuit. So if you do get a device wet, the first thing we always recommend is dry it. Not in a dryer.
No.
Also not recommended. I think you just got very lucky, but hey.
I did.
Impressive. Impressive construction.
I just want to let people know.
Thank you, George.
I appreciate them making such a good product.
Yeah. Sony, what their slogan used to be, Sony no baloney. That's right, when they tanked. It's kind of a sad story, Sony. They were weren't they the dominant consumer electronics manufacturer for years? I mean, if you wanted a quality TV or radio or headphones or whatever, the Walkman, right? They created the Walkman. They created a category. They were the Apple, frankly, of the 80s. And a number of things happened. One was that a little Korean company called Lucky Gold Star decided that why should these Japanese companies dominate consumer electronics? We could make good stuff. They used to, Lucky Gold Star, of course, you may remember them from the back of the drugstore in the supermarket where they sold really cheap TVs. Well, they rebranded LG now and became a very dominant company. Same thing happened with Sharp and, of course, Samsung. And the Japanese companies like Toshiba and Sony and Panasonic started to suffer economically. The sad state of Sony right now is, except for the PlayStation, they don't really have any successful products. They make good TVs, but they're not the world beater they used to be. And they're not dominant by any means. And the last time I checked, most of Sony's profits came from their Japanese insurance business, not from consumer electronics. So it's what happens in this industry. And I think if you got a Sony product that was made in the 80s or 90s, you got a pretty good product. I don't know if did their quality go down? I don't sense it did. Those TVs are still very good. They just got a lot of competition from Korea. And now the same thing, by the way, is what goes around comes around happening to Korea. Chinese companies like TCL and Huawei and Xiaomi are trying to muscle in to the Korean consumer electronics business and really pushing. And so you'll start to see TCL TVs, for instance, in the store and so forth. And after all, China makes most of these products, so it kind of makes sense that they might want to, sell them too. You're right, George. We talk about stuff that doesn't work all the time. Let's talk about something that does. Brian in Nashville, Tennessee. Hello, Brian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I am hanging in like a hair in a biscuit.
Oh, I gave you that opening again.
You do it every time.
Brian, it wouldn't be the same if I didn't.
No, it wouldn't.
What can I do for you?
Two quick things. First one is, never tried this before, but I heard you talking about it, and I was doing an upgrade on my phone. I have an iPhone. Set my alarm of course, we're on Central Time. Set my alarm for 5 minutes till 2 o'clock.
You know what? We're going to have to hear the end of this story in about 10 minutes because
I know
there's another alarm going off right now, that magic alarm that tells me we have to take a break for news at the top of the hour. Hang on, Brian. We'll pretend we hadn't talked before the hour, and we'll start over again. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom. I owe a debt of gratitude to LegalZoom because back in 2005, when I had this, just kind of twinkle in my eye, this idea that maybe I would want to, I don't know what got into me. Having been an employee my whole life, working for people, that I might want to start a company doing, podcasts. What a nutty idea. And I before I did this, at least I did a little research, and I asked my friend Kevin Rose, who started many companies already, founder of Dig. Kevin, what should I do? He said, oh, easy. Go to LegalZoom and set up an LLC, a limited liability company. That way you can't get sued. They can't take your house. And it's easy to do, and it's inexpensive at LegalZoom. You don't need a lawyer. You can do all the forms. And then after that, I did that. And then after that, I said, but I probably should trademark the name and the logo. And I did that. And LegalZoom saved me, I don't know, untold amounts of money, because instead of paying $450 an hour for some white shoe attorney to do it all for me, I could do it myself. That's kind of how LegalZoom started. For people in business who wanted to do the basic legal stuff without help from an attorney. Because you don't have time, you don't have money, especially when you're first starting out. But now LegalZoom is really so much more. LegalZoom.com. When it comes to reviewing contracts or registering trademarks or staying current on fees and permits, LegalZoom will simplify your life. Created 16 years ago by very smart attorneys, the brightest minds in law and technology. They merged the two. They've helped more than 2 million business owners over the years easily and affordably navigate the legal system with confidence. And not having to think about, I know, you know, now, of course, as because we've gotten bigger and we have more legal issues, we have attorneys on retainer. And I know when I talk to my attorneys, I had a conference call with my two attorneys last week. And I'm sorry, but I can't help but see in my head the little odometer going every minute, you know. And they're talking about the weather. And I'm going, no, guess what? I don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. Don't worry about billing hours. LegalZoom's not a law firm. They don't bill you by the hour. But, and this is new, they didn't have this, and I love this. You can get, they have it now, you can get the advice you need from an actual attorney. They have a nationwide network of independent attorneys, pre-negotiated flat rate, so you still don't have the odometer spinning when you're talking to them. Take pressure off yourself and still get the stuff you need to do done. By the way, wills, power of attorney, medical power of attorney, all the things you need to do, trusts. We've done that all with LegalZoom. They send you, the will thing was great. They sent you a nice kit. Go to LegalZoom.com right now. Take care of your business before the year winds down. And I got a little deal for you, a little special savings if you use the promo code TECHGUY, just so that you will and let them know you heard it here. LegalZoom.com. Put TECHGUY, one word, in the referral box at checkout. And we thank LegalZoom for making the Tech Guy podcast possible and, frankly, helping me set up this whole enterprise. LegalZoom.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, anything with a chip in it, 8888. Ask Leo is the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Brian on the line from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
I'm not going to ask how you doing.
Okay.
You already got it in once. Hanging in like a hair in a biscuit. Okay.
That's right.
That's right. All right, Brian, what can I do for you today?
All right, quick story and then to my question. The
sure.
story is I always generally stay a phone behind on the iPhones, but we were
smart.
On vacation.
That, by the way, that is the best advice in general. Don't buy the latest. Buy the second to last one.
I know, but, you know, what the heck? You only live once.
It's hard not to. In this consumer society, you're not really doing your part if you don't buy the latest everything.
I know. So we're on vacation in Florida, and I'm staying up late anyway. I said, you know what? I'll just set the alarm for just before 2.
12:01 a.m. Pacific time. Yep.
All right.
Yep.
2:01 Central.
Yep.
And, by the way, it looks like they closed the store at, like, in our time. It was about 8 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, wow, that was early.
Yeah.
So anyway,
which is, by the way, absurd, because modern web technology does not require you to close the store to prepare for the new items. It used to. Apple used to have to do that because they used Apple's own terrible WebObjects technology, but they've gotten off of that, I hope.
Are they building anticipation, maybe? Who knows? I don't know.
Yes, it's all marketing.
So I said, you know what? What the heck? Try it. You know, so, like, you know, it's...
Yeah, what the heck? $1,000 later, go ahead.
I know.
201.
I'm on their program.
I'm just looking. Not going to buy. Just looking.
Couldn't get in. Then finally it opened. Now, I did pre-order. You know,
oh,
there
good.
Was that option where you could pre-order and have it all done.
Yeah.
I said, wow. That was done. It saw that. And then it came up, but then it went to this other screen. Says we need more information. You didn't fill out all this. I said, well, it's all there. I hit OK.
No.
I said, well, I know I'm not going to get it now. Now it's another 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It spun for 2 seconds, and it said, okay, your phone will be there Friday.
Oh, I'm so jealous. So you're getting a iPhone 10. Which one did you get?
I got the space gray.
Space gray 256, top of the line, $1,000. $149 plus tax.
Thank you for saying that.
I hope your wife's not listening. So
she is, but she doesn't have a clue.
Yeah. Oh, honey, you need that. No, you do need that. You need that because that's going to be, there's no question that's going to be the best possible iPhone. And if you're an iPhone user and you want the best, the top of the line, the iPhone with all the bells and whistles, that's the one.
I got a feeling I'm going to miss that button, though.
Well, there's a lot of question marks, and it's one of the reasons I was trying so hard. I did the same thing. Maybe I tried too hard. You know what I did? It's midnight our time. So 11:45, I know the store's closed because I've been checking all evening. I go into my my home office. I fire up the Apple Store on my PC. I fire up the Apple Store, no, the T-Mobile Store, because they're my carrier, on my second screen. So I got two stores open. I get my iPhone and my iPad. I fire up the iOS Apple Store, because I've often had experience that's the fastest way to get in. And I'm sitting there refreshing. 12 goes by. Midnight goes by. The hoot owl, woo-hoo. The clock, bong, bong. Nothing. No stores open. T-Mobile is offering me an upgrade to an iPhone 8, which I already have. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Hit refresh. I see people on Twitter, got mine. I see people like you, got mine. Number of people had good results calling. I didn't realize you could call the phone company at midnight and buy a phone, but I guess you can on Apple Day. That's a special company.
Yeah, I use the Apple Store app. I was surprised.
That's usually the best way. My wife, by the way, who did not get up, who stayed in bed, she just took her iPhone, she sleepily opened the Apple Store, bought it, and went back to sleep. She beat me. She's getting hers in a week. So I think that what happened, I don't know what happened. I think Apple thought I wanted it too badly. I don't know. The gods did not smile upon me. I suspect what Apple does is they don't open it all at once to save their servers. Now, this, by the way, is another stupid thing. In this day and age, there's no surprise to T-Mobile, AT&T, Sprint, or Verizon, or Apple, that at midnight on Friday, there's going to be a few people banging on their website. Put some extra servers up. Buy some bandwidth. You can do it. But I think they like it that it's hard to get. I think they like it that people like us are going to talk about it the next day. Did you get it? I don't know. Everybody's tweeting, I got it. I didn't get it. It's ridiculous.
Yep. Well, here's my main question. Here's the thing I'm asking about. Internet of Things and bridges. Here's what's happened. I love these Hue bulbs. That's what I started with. I have my entire man cave with these Hue bulbs. I have two backlit monitors with two of them. I have one in a fan above me, a ceiling fan. And then one in the desk lamp.
These are the Philips bulbs that connect to your Wi-Fi. They have three LEDs in there, red, green, and blue, so they can make any color in the rainbow.
Any color you want.
Yep.
They have their own smart hub. And it also has a motion detector that I have over on my bookshelf. So when I get up in the morning and go make my coffee and then walk in here, the lights come on to a nice setting.
That's nice.
Kind of cool. I know,
yeah.
I know.
No, I like that. That's nice.
First world problems. But the neat thing that my friend showed me what he uses at home was I've been wanting one in my door lock on my front door as well. So I went and got the door lock, the one he uses, which he says he swears by. It had good ratings. Obviously, I didn't do my research enough because if I find out, it only works on one hub, and it's not the one I got.
Oh, nuts. Yeah, so this
is what... It works on a SmartThings hub.
Right. This is what's been a kind of a problem all along with home automation is there's different languages. There's Z-Wave. There's Zigbee.
Zigbee, yes.
Yeah, and so you have to get a... In general, what people have done until recently is each device has its own app, its own hub, like you have your Philips Hue have their own hub, and you had to have multiple hubs and multiple apps, and that's not home automation. That's just annoying. But
here's what was interesting what support told me, and I said, wait, you've got to be crazy, because I'm having issues with that door lock. Literally, my router... actually, not the router, because I forgot. This is Zigbee. This is not...
You have a hub, a Zigbee hub, a SmartThings hub that talks to
right.
Zigbee. Yeah.
The hub is literally 11 feet from that door lock with one wall, which is just drywall. There's no...
Yeah.
Okay? I'm having issues with it. It says you need to get a repeater. And I said,
Lord.
What?
Well, okay.
Wait a minute. So, wait a minute. 11 feet away. Where do I put
it? No. It's
on
not
this
a repeater.
Side of the wall?
No. It's not a repeater. Not a repeater to the lock. It's a repeater to the Wi-Fi. So the Zig, so the Zigbee,
the hub is plugged into the router with 3 feet. Distance.
Oh, then you don't need a repeater. It's plugged in. It's physically wired. Oh, and I take it back.
Yes.
Usually, that's what they mean when they say repeater. So they want you to have a Zigbee repeater.
Well, I'm smart enough to know. Yeah, I'm smart enough to know that these bridges, you want to, if you can, you want to plug these into the router, or at least a switch that goes to the router, so they're wired in. My desk is wired in, so just for that. But anyway, it's like I was curious if there was any kind of. A lot of times you have open source hardware.
There are now, believe it or not, you're starting to get Wi-Fi routers with Zigbee built in. This is going to be the solution, I think, in the long run. And ultimately, the real solution will be that things won't be using Zigbee or Z-Wave. They'll be talking to HomeKit or the Google Hub or whatever it is you've got. So I'll talk a little bit about a solution for you when we get back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You did it again. We used up another segment. So the Zigbee radio 11 feet away says it can't reach the lock. That can't possibly. Really?
No. I know. It's not.
That seems unfortunate. So they are building a Zigbee into the new Amazon Echo Silver. That'll have a Zigbee radio in it.
Really?
Yeah, which is good. It means that you no longer will need that hub. And it may be better. So the hub may not be. Are you using the SmartThings hub?
Yes.
Then you're using the latest one, I presume.
Yes.
Yeah. The nice thing about SmartThings is it's Zigbee and Z-Wave.
Yes.
They used to be an advertiser, and I like their stuff. Then they got bought by Samsung. So now it's even better because Samsung is going to make everything work with it. Gosh, I know 11 feet's not very far. It's right near your door.
No. Now it works right now. For instance, it's working. It's fine. But
it's not. It's
the,
not
the biggest
reliable.
Thing we like it for. The biggest, to be honest, and I know this sounds lazy. The biggest thing we like it for. We do a lot of. We go to a lot of farmers market, yard sales, all this kind of stuff. We come home. We're carrying bags. When I park the car, I literally just push a button. The front door's unlocked.
I love it. There's nothing wrong with that. That's not lazy. That's why you get a lock like that.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, that kind of started all this, and I know this sounds weird, again, another one of those first world problems, we had got our first car that uses a fob that we don't use a key.
Yeah, I love that, too.
So I never get my keys out. Literally,
yeah,
my keys are in my
pocket. Yeah, me too. I love
never
that.
Never have to get them out.
Yeah.
So when we get to the front door, you know, I keep them in because I wear a lot of tactical pants. They're zipped up, so when I get to the door, stuff in my hands, I don't have to unzip my pants, pull the keys out.
You want to leave your dongle in your pants is what you're saying.
Yes. So anyway, it's just, I don't know, it was well worth it. But now I'm sitting here with two hubs now, and I'm thinking, I'm starting to want to put some stuff in to handle some plugs. There's a lot of stuff in our house we want to be able to turn on and off. We use every room has Amazon Alexa. We have that in every room. My man cave in the kitchen, we have the I forgot what it's called, the new one with the screen, the larger one.
So here's the thing. That's one of the reasons I think Amazon is building Zigbee into its new Echoes, and I bet you all the Echoes will eventually have Zigbee radios, is already – I bet you that lock works with Amazon, right? Does it work with an Echo? A lot of these locks do. Yeah, no, look. See if there's a skill for that lock, and you can say, Echo, unlock the front door. And that's awesome when you can do that. So what you're going to hope is that you might want to put some Zigbees in with your Amazons. I bet you it'll be a better radio than that SmartThings. You can keep the SmartThings around if you want. Somebody else is saying you should try the Raspberry Pi with the Home Assistant. That has a better radio in it. That's a $35 solution. I don't know of any. You're saying do you want an extender for the SmartThings? Is that what you want?
No, I just don't understand why it's not working through that one little wall. It should work.
Metal, is there metal in the wall? Do you know?
No, there's not at all. It's just drywall. But the other thing I was curious about was that somebody, some entrepreneur somewhere must be coming up with a...
They are. The problem is too many entrepreneurs are coming up with too many solutions. And there's no unified. There's no unified solution. Hey, I got to run, Brian. It's great to talk to you.
Sure. Thank
have you. A wonderful. I don't have a solution for you. We're just, you know, this is that. This is the world we're in where home automation is still a head scratcher, I'm afraid. There are two songs in this world that begin with a creaking door opening. And I often confuse them. One is this, The Monster Mash by Bobby Boris Pickett. The other, of course, Michael Jackson's Thriller. And I'm sure we'll be hearing that a little later on, too. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, happy Halloween weekend. I hope you're enjoying your Monster Mash. We were talking with Brian before the break about home automation. And really, there's no real good solution. It's just a mess right now. There's different protocols. But they're starting to be a leader in this horse race. And it is a very crowded horse race with Apple, Google, Microsoft, and of course Amazon, all trying to be the winner, the leader here. Right now, Amazon has the lead because of the Amazon Echo. It's very smart. I don't know if they even thought of this when they released the Echo. I think the Echo, when they released it 3 years ago, was just a guess, experiment. Oh, we don't know what's going to happen. Let's try it. Let's see what happens. And people took to it. Not a lot of people initially, but the people who did buy them, like me, raved about them to their friends and family and said, "You got it. This thing is great." And it's spread. And now millions and millions of Echoes have been sold. They come in all different forms and fashions. I just got my Echo Look, speaking of fashion, that takes a picture of your outfit each day and then says, "You know, I think you look better with more gem tone colors in your scarves or whatever." Amazon hopes to sell clothing through this device. I am the wrong person to be owning an Amazon Look. It has a camera and a flash and it takes pictures. Kind of a nutty idea. But that's what the point is, that Amazon's experimenting. And one of the experiments was to allow third parties to write skills for the Echo. And what's happened is a lot of home automation devices have kind of added Echo skills. So now I can, for instance, look at my Ring video doorbell on my Echo Show. I can see what's going on my Nest cameras in my backyard with my Echo Show. You can open your doors and check your gas and do all sorts of things, which is kind of interesting. I can actually, I can ask what my Tesla's charge state is on my Amazon Echo, all because of these third-party skills. And now Amazon's released a new Echo. It's coming this week. I think Tuesday it's coming out, the Echo Silver, that will have a Zigbee radio built in. Zigbee, one of the two main competing, although there are many protocols for home automation. So if you have a Zigbee hub and an Echo, that really gives Zigbee, I think, an advantage, a lead. It's been neck and neck with Z-Wave. And it also furthers Amazon's lead in this race. I keep waiting for Apple's been talking about it. It's Apple Home and for so long. And the problem, I think, is that Apple's restrictions on people using it are so draconian, their requirements so steep, the costs so high, that a lot of home automation devices are just bypassing Apple's Home and saying, everybody wants to do it with the Echo. Everybody works with the Echo. So Echo seems to be the leader. And it is a breakthrough in one sense. Home automation is difficult if you have to take out your phone, launch an app to open your garage door, or to open your locks, or to see what. But if you can talk to your house and say, "Turn the lights down and turn on the TV," that's a very natural interface. It doesn't require any effort to get the phone out or anything. And I think that that's going to be the winner. So we're starting to see the fog of war start to lift, and I think we've got a victor. I feel like Amazon and the Echo are going to be the home automation kings. They're going to win in the long run. And if you were thinking about doing home automation for your home, I would say make sure you get stuff, and most stuff does, that works with Amazon. Because Amazon's going to, in the long run, I think Amazon's going to be the winner here. Google really wants to get into this game. Google has a little bit of an advantage in machine learning and artificial intelligence, the kind of stuff that you need to have an assistant be useful. But I don't know if it's enough to surpass Amazon's lead. 8888-ASK-LEO. Robert on the line from Mira Mesa, California. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call. And I love your show, you know, as a non-geek.
Perfect.
And I want to piggyback on what you've been discussing. I'm interested in purchasing a vocal assistant. Price is no object. I'm willing to pay for good engineering and, in particular, a good artificial intelligence engine. And I'm willing to wait 6-8 months as things shake out. And as you were saying, Amazon seems to be the leader now with Echo. But Google seems to be having a lot of research and development in AI.
Yeah. Google will always win in AI. So some of this decision, buying decision, comes down to what you want to do with this home assistant.
I would like to do simple things like, order from Amazon and play audible.com. But I'd like to do, be able to ask a lot of very robust questions.
Yeah.
I'm sort of a news junkie,
yeah.
You know. I'd like to be able to ask very robust questions, you know, concerning on-the-spot news, that type of thing.
Yeah, and Google's the winner in that category. Of course, Amazon's the winner. In fact, Amazon's the only one that'll let you shop on Amazon. Amazon is very good with music. Amazon is very good with simple commands like setting a timer, checking my garage, you know, the state of my garage door. There's more than 50,000 third-party skills now. But the problem with skills is they're hard to find. The discovery is not great. And then you have to learn a new skill, and you have to turn the skill on by talking in a specific syntax to the Echo. You have to say, you know, Echo, let's play Jeopardy, for instance, and it will then start the Jeopardy skill. So Echo is very good in all of that. But what you want is an assistant that's more human-like, that you can talk to and ask things of and get information from, particularly news. Google is easily the best of the two. So your solution may be to have both. And by the way, that's one of the solutions a number of people are suggesting. I don't like that idea because I have both. For instance, at home I have a Google assistant sitting right next to an Amazon Echo. And it's just too hard for me to think, well, I have to say, you know, hey, Google device, or hello, Echo. I mean, and then what is the syntax? And they differ. And I find I don't use the Google device, even though it's right there.
Right.
So, I think you mentioned Audible, which is an Amazon company. I use my Echoes to listen to audiobooks. I love that. My favorite Echo, if we're going to pick one Echo, is the Echo Show, and that's because it has a 7-inch screen, which gives you additional features. You can have photo album there. You can use the show to, for instance, if you say, what are the hot songs right now? It can show you on the screen so you can tap one of them and pick them. It can show you the view from cameras. So it can. I have a Ring doorbell out front. They're a sponsor, but I have a Ring doorbell out front, and I can say, show me my front door. I have a Nest camera out back. I can say, show me my backyard. And it'll show on that screen. So, plus, it has pretty decent speakers. If you said you're willing to wait, I wouldn't recommend waiting because I think getting into this now is a good idea. If you're going to buy today, I would absolutely say get the Echo Show. It's the pricier Echo because of the screen. I think $230. But this is the best the Echo can do right now. Amazon and Google both have cheaper devices you can experiment with if you want as well. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, for instance, there's the Google Mini, the Google Home Mini, which is $50, and the Echo Dot, which is $40. That might be a solution for you, Robert, to have one of each and see, you know, if you use them both. I just don't think I don't use them both, because even though I have them both.
Right, right.
I just got the new Cortana device, and there's no way I'm bringing that home. I'm not going to ever use it.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I was just wondering what the best, you know, like over the next 6 months, if I should wait to see how things shake out as far as the AI engines that support, you know, like Apple or Google or...
It won't be 6 months. So right now, Amazon has such a strong lead, it's lapped Google. But Google is not giving up. And I think their assistant will eventually, but it won't be in 6 months, in a few years... become almost like a smart assistant, you know, like an artificial intelligence that you can talk to. And yes. that will be very interesting. I don't think Amazon has any ambitions down that road. They don't have the technology to do it. But,
right.
But Google does. So at that point, you might, and I don't expect it will be a standalone device. I think what will happen is you will have a pair of Google headphones that you will, I don't know if you saw the movie Her.
Yes.
That's I anticipate Google will be the one to provide us with that kind of AI in our ear. And I think it will be a headphone device, if I were to guess. But that's right. That's years off. We got a long way to go for that one.
Yes.
So for right now, to me, I would buy an Amazon Echo Show. I have all the Echoes. I ordered the Spot, which is a little version of the Show that's an alarm clock. That might be a good choice, too. I just don't think that screen's going to be big enough to do stuff. So I would say the Echo Show is the one to get, and you can get that today.
Absolutely. Okay.
My pleasure. Yeah. Okay. Have a good day. Yeah, I think a lot of people, yes?
No, I'm just looking.
I opened my dongle bag. The look is back here, and I'm going to use this because I'm going to do this right now. I'm going to use the look each day to take a picture of my outfit so that I know what I wore each day, right?
Is it far enough away?
Well, I'm going to find out right now when I fire up the Echo app and I take a look at my look. Oh, no, I have to use the Look app, don't I? Let's do the Look app. Love your look every day. Okay, I got to show you guys since this is ridiculous. This is yesterday. So what it does is your latest look, October 28th, and then you can compare it. You can do a style check on it. And then can I see? Oh, here's previous looks.
There.
So you could see every day. Okay, I'm trying to be fashionable, but you see it blurs out the background. So that's cool. So I'm going to let me do my look. I have to do my look for today. So this is, what do? You do, you say,
Hello. Take a picture.
Okay, now. So now, and you see how it cropped it too. Oh, that's kind of cool. So now I have the picture of me. Chris Marquardt is here. He's a professional photographer, leads amazing workshops to discover the top floor. And Chris, I know you just redid your amazing, and I own it, and I've watched it, Lightroom series. Are you banging yourself on the forehead saying, what did I do?
No, not really. So, yeah, we did this original Lightroom video workshop in 2014.
It's really good. Where is it? Is it Lightroom?
What's
it?
DiscoverLightroom.com. Yeah, and we updated it to the latest Lightroom Creative Cloud version, the Lightroom CC version. That's the one where you pay like a monthly rent.
And I've been doing that. The photography deal was great. You got Lightroom and Photoshop for $10 a month. These are both $800 pro. Well, Photoshop's $800. Lightroom's like $300. So that was a good deal, right?
It's okay. It's a good deal. I mean, there are still people who prefer to buy the boxed version. That's the one they buy. And then, I think you still
can
buy with Lightroom 6, you still could. Standard. But now we have Lightroom 7.
Uh-oh.
That is the problem. So Adobe did something interesting. They changed, first of all, they changed the name. Lightroom Creative Cloud is now, well, if you want to, okay, this is difficult. Let me try to go through that.
Let me put it this way. They completely redesigned Lightroom. I mean, from the ground up so that it's unrecognizable. It's a different program entirely. That's called Lightroom CC. And they took the old Lightroom and they call that Lightroom Classic CC.
Yes. So the new Lightroom CC, the one that is now the name that the old one had.
Your videos would have no help for because
they wouldn't be any help.
It doesn't.
If
it's a different program.
But there is the in quotes professional version that still has everything in it that you used to have, which is a mapping module, a bookmaking module. I used that book module. There's a web module. There's
this
a print module.
This makes me cry because this was a wonderful program. Admittedly, getting a little long on the tooth, needed some updating. But still very useful. It was a little slow, but it was very useful. Everybody, okay. Everybody I know uses it. Well, it's still here.
It's still here under a new name. It's called Lightroom Classic CC now, which I'm not happy with that name, because Classic, if you have an existing thing and you turn it into Classic, that to me indicates that it might be on the way out.
Well, also implies, sure, if this is Lightroom Classic, that the new Lightroom is like new Coke. And you know what? It is. It's terrible. It's terrible.
So the new Lightroom is like the old Lightroom, minus a whole bunch of stuff, including the print module, including the book module, and so on. So it's pretty much the library and the develop module that we used from Lightroom, but that's pretty much it. And I haven't really looked at that new version. The one that I'm most interested in as a professional is the Lightroom Classic CC.
Yeah, yeah. And so I haven't tried. I bought foolishly, thinking the new Lightroom's here. I bought a year's subscription for $120 to the new Lightroom. You get with it a terabyte of storage. All for the new Lightroom really doesn't want to store your photos on your hard drive. It wants to store them in the cloud, which is nice. If you use an iPad, which I do, and you use Lightroom on the iPad, then you can edit both places and it goes back and forth, blah, blah, blah. But it looks like it was designed for a non-photographer, like an amateur photographer.
It's for ease of use. I think that's their claim. They want to make this as easy to use as possible. And the original Lightroom is, well, there's quite a lot in there.
I have Lightroom Classic because I didn't cancel that subscription, so it updated that, but I haven't played with it yet. Tell me, first of all, I maybe made a mistake. I migrated my Lightroom catalog to the new Lightroom. Does that mean I can't use it anymore with Classic?
You will have to upgrade the catalog to the new Lightroom. Yes, it will do that for you.
Yeah.
But if you are on a CC subscription, all you do is click update and it will update Lightroom Classic.
But can I
and
go
then,
back? Okay.
And then it converts the catalog, but it doesn't replace the existing one. It will just add a new one. It will convert it and copy the file. Interestingly enough, my catalog became quite a bit smaller after that. They changed something in the database. So I've had a huge catalog.
We're
talking
good.
90,000 pictures, lots of edits.
Me too.
I think it was almost 4 gigabytes in size. And that got reduced to something like 2 gigabytes, so it shrunk quite a bit, which is
so
good.
So are you going to use the new one, or are you going to stick with Classic?
Yes. No, well, no, not the new one. I will stick with Classic, which is now Lightroom 7, which is the successor to Lightroom 6.
Is it
6,
better
which,
than the old Lightroom 6?
It is faster.
Good.
They have made good on that claim. They had to, because Lightroom 6 was
a pig.
Very hard to use in some circumstances. Yeah. So in some areas, it's become faster. It has a new processing engine under the hood for images, which I haven't really seen a difference to the old one. They've improved some areas.
Is the user interface the same, or they've changed that?
It's exactly the same.
Oh,
it's exactly the same.
Because my fingers know where to go.
So the workshop, the video workshop that I did is... it's 100% applicable to Lightroom Classic CC. It doesn't. It's not different in that
so
respect.
Really,
it even has a couple of new features, which are quite interesting. And
so
one
really,
is
this
that,
is a fork in the road. It's not leaving. It's not a one way upgrade. You could choose.
I think that's where they want to go. Of course, they want to push people towards the new Lightroom version, because that will, well, it will cost more because they give you more storage with it because they have to, because all your images will live up there.
Yeah.
Now they say that the client, and I haven't tried it, but they say that the client has a cache built in, so you can be offline, you can import your photos, you can work on them apparently, and then it will go up in the cloud when you go online. So at least that case is kind of taken care of, but still, way less features. I know
a lot of professionals who
need the printing features.
I'll tell you what's missing that's absolutely critical. There's no histogram.
Oh, if they skip that one,
there's
that
no
is
histogram.
A problem.
I can't find it. So you go into the adjustments, you got the same sliders, clarity, vibrance, tint, and all that. But you used to have at the top, you'd have the three channels and you'd have a histogram of the three channels. It's gone.
And you haven't found a way to bring that back?
Well, I haven't played with it that much, but if I can't get that back, that's a non-starter. But I think they don't want that, because I think that confuses people who aren't pros.
I think the new Lightroom is a very Well, dare I say, a very dumbed down version
it's
of Lightroom.
Dumbed down. That's what it is.
What is now Lightroom Classic? Yeah.
Well, we got to make sure Adobe hears us and keeps Lightroom Classic, but it's also, as we've talked about, a real opportunity for other companies like MacFun, Serif, the folks who do that great Affinity Photo for the iPad, to jump into the mix and say, "Well, we can do it."
I hope they will. I hope that will generate some competition. Yeah. I think that's what Adobe needs at this point.
Yeah. So, Classic's still great. In fact, it sounds like it's even better.
It's a bit better, yes.
You were saying there are two new features you really liked?
The one new feature that's interesting is it has now masks that you can use in... Well, you can brush in stuff. You can brush in changes and adjustments to your image. You can now also add a mask to that based on the luminance or the color in the picture, which is, in some cases, a really good feature. So... Right. That's something that I like, and it made my catalog much smaller, which I think
I like that
is partially responsible for the speed increase. So it does feel okay. I just hope it won't go the root of other stuff.
The root of all evil. Chris Marquardt, go to discoverlightroom.com. You can still learn how to use Lightroom Classic, which is still the best tool for professional photographers. I love it, and that's why we're sad that Adobe, I hope they're not going to abandon it, but learn it. Chris Marquardt's at Discover the Top Floor. He'll be back next week, and we'll talk more about travel photography. Okay, Chris?
Absolutely.
Have a great week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Okay. Very nice. Very good. I'm sorry to throw you that curve, but I think it's pretty timely. I will stand corrected. In fact, what I'll do is I will find out I can't find that histogram. If
that's really not there, that would be a showstopper right there. Yeah.
Because, you know, so you click on the image. There's some nice features. I mean, there are some nice ease of use features, but you click on the feature and then now it has on the right the four different categories, you know. You click the settings. It opens up, you know, all the traditional settings, tint and clarity and stuff. No histogram at the top. I mean, I used to drag that all the time to adjust the exposure.
Oh, lots of people work that way. That's very convenient, yeah.
It would be a weird thing to kill. But it would be kind of, it would explain what they're up to. I'll look for it really hard, and by next week I'll be able to come back after the segment and say, no, I checked, it's still there.
Since Adobe went cloud, their earnings have skyrocketed.
Oh, yeah, because we're paying them every freaking month.
Yep. Yeah. I think someone else needs to step in at this point.
It's a huge, you know, I'm good friends with Scott Bourne, who's on the MacFun advisory board. He feels like MacFun is going to be ready to step in with Affinity and a solution. But I think you're right. I think Serif could give him a good run because Affinity Pro is pretty amazing. I mean, at least the underlying technology. UI is difficult, but it's there.
Well, if they manage to get this under the hood, under one hood, in a similar way that Lightroom, that Adobe did with Lightroom, then yeah. I think Affinity has the right chops to do it. And they have been working on that. Seen that on some half-official confirmations on their blogs and forums, especially on the forums, that they are working on a DAM, that they are just not going to be ready in 2017. So I sure hope that
it's the same thing with MacFun.
They're shifting resources at this
MacFun
point.
MacFun says our DAM will be ready in 2018. We'll see. Digital asset management. It's the big part of it. Lightroom lets you import all your photos and manage them. Uncle Bick, I don't know. You would know if you have the new one. It looks so different. You would say, so the fact that you're saying if mine is up to date tells me you don't have the new one.
If you only click upgrade in the Lightroom CC control panel, then you have Classic.
You have to buy the new one. You'll know if it's updated. You'll say, what the hell? This is a different program. This is nothing like the old Lightroom. And did you import your catalog? You still have to do that for the new one, right?
If you upgrade to Lightroom Classic, then it'll offer you to upgrade the catalog. Okay. The thing that I found a bit scary there is that it didn't, of course, on the Mac, it didn't change any of my shortcuts and stuff. So because it changed the name of the app, all the quick start links in the dock and stuff were
Yeah,
we're not working anymore. And then through an error message for some weird reason. So I think when once you go that way to the classic, you can't really go back.
Yeah.
At least not easily.
Yeah. Plus, it's so. And one of the things that was important about Lightroom is that you had direct management of your files. This is, there's a lot of like, oh, don't worry about that. We'll do that. No,
in the new Lightroom, the packages all into one.
You don't want to worry about your files, where your folders are. You don't want to worry. Like, I'm trying to figure out, well, where are these importing? How are they importing?
Well.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sharon! 8888, ask Leo. We're talking high tech. Mark in Vienna, Virginia. Hi, Mark.
Hello there. How you doing?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm enjoying a rainy day because I put grass seed down yesterday.
Oh, man, your timing was very good.
Yes, and it's a gentle soaking rain.
Oh, man, it's as if you planned it.
Yes, well, I did. Oh. I planned the grass seed.
Good. Well, enjoy your new lawn. I wish we could have lawns out here in California, but they're kind of, we don't get enough rain to really justify it.
Yeah.
I missed lawns. Okay. What can I do for you?
Okay, I got two different questions about two different cell phones. So the important one first, my wife's phone. Okay. She spent quite a bit of time the last 2 years out of state with her sister because her brother-in-law was in very ill health. So while out there, my wife's sister bought her, well, she actually bought for a pair for herself, her husband, and for my wife, some phones from Verizon.
Okay.
Okay. Now, we had always been using Consumer Cellular, which is sort of a company without their own lines. They just piggyback off of others.
They resell. They're what we call an MVNO. They resell others' connectivity.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, so this year when my wife got back, we went into the local Verizon store and paid off the
You want to use those phones with your carrier.
Exactly.
You need to unlock them.
Exactly. Well, we did that.
Good.
Okay, but what we are finding is I had always thought that if you bought an unlocked phone and you could take to any carrier and you got what that carrier would have given you.
Yeah, it's a little more complicated than that, yeah.
Well, that's what you're now telling me.
Yeah, now I'm telling you. So the carriers, when you buy a phone from them, they feel like, and this really came from the days when they subsidized the phone. Well, you know, we're giving you a deal on the phone, so you better stick with us. So they would do what's called carrier locking. There's less reason for carrier locking now because most of the time, you're not, you know, the phone isn't subsidized by the carrier. You're paying the full freight, whether you do it all at once or over a 12 months or 24 months. So most carriers will unlock it in, once the phone's paid off and you're a customer in good standing, et cetera, et cetera. But unlocking it just means you can put somebody else's SIM in. It doesn't guarantee that it will work fully. And that's because we have a kind of patchwork quilt of technologies in the United States. That's getting resolved. Everybody's moving to LTE, which for the most part means that one phone will work with everybody else if they have all the proper radios. And that's another – so this is – there's two wrinkles. First, in the first wrinkles – and this is kind of getting, you know, old school now, thank goodness. Verizon and Sprint used a technology called CDMA, and AT&T and T-Mobile used GSM. And Consumer Cellular would use whichever technology the carrier that they were piggybacking on would use, and they piggyback on multiple carriers. And that's less of a problem now. You can get a Verizon phone, a CDMA phone, with an LTE SIM card in it and put a T-Mobile LTE SIM card in it, and it will work. It may not work fully because T-Mobile uses frequencies Verizon doesn't use.
Well, okay. I'm not quite sure that that's the issue we're looking into.
Okay.
Now, the very first issue you see is sort of minor in that you turn the phone on, it still gives you a Verizon splash screen.
Okay, that's going to be, nobody would, yeah, that's burned into the firmware.
Yeah. Okay, well, what I'd love to do is burn new firmware into that.
Well, you could, but this is an advanced, this is a black diamond topic for an advanced geek. Yeah. But I'll tell you how to do that. What else, what's the other problem?
Okay, well, the next problem we run into is she gets a notification pop-up that says, oh, you've got voicemail. So you click on the notification pop-up, and guess what it does? It dials Verizon,
yeah.
And Verizon says error number such and such. You don't have voicemail.
So that can be fixed easily.
Well, that we would love to do.
Yeah. So you've moved back to consumer cellular?
Yeah.
So the easiest thing to do would be at this point, call Consumer Cellular and tell them that you've migrated a phone from Verizon, and they will tell you what settings need to be changed. The voicemail number, of course, can be changed easily, and that's one setting. But there's also an APN setting that you need to change for data to make sure that you're optimized for their consumer cellular. You already did that?
We've done that, yes. They first sent us a SIM that put us on the T-Mobile network.
Right.
And we did all of those settings. And then they later sent us a SIM that put us on AT&T. And we've redone all of those settings.
Okay.
So.
Well, I would call them then for the voicemail issue, because that's something they can fix easily. It may involve, depends on the phone. Some phones is right there in the settings. Other phones, you have to dial a special code, a *#302# kind of a code. And that's easily done, but I don't want to guess on which one Consumer Cellular uses. So that's a simple call to Consumer Cellular. Just say, hey, I'm getting Verizon voicemail still. This is, you know, it's unfortunate because Verizon, even though they're by FCC rules, they're not allowed to lock their SIM card slots. So you don't even have to really technically unlock a Verizon phone. But even then, yeah, they put a lot of stuff on there, like the splash screen. That comes from a simple system file. If you can root the phone and remove it pretty easily. Although rooting the phone is, as I said, a black diamond skill. And if you want to put a more modern ROM on, if it's an Android phone, you can't do this with iPhones, but if you have an Android phone and you want to update that phone, you can also do that. Best way to do either of those things, rooting, which is the first step to updating or modifying the firmware, I would recommend going to a site called XDA Developers, xda-developers.com. It's a forum for Android enthusiasts. And they have right there on the front page, search for your phone. And now you want to search for the exact model. So you're going to go into the About This Phone setting and really get the model number, SM910U or whatever that is. Because that's what you want to search for. Because even within, for instance, a Samsung Galaxy S8, there are multiple model numbers. And you need to have exactly the right model number. You'll go to that portion of the XDA Developers forums. And it will have instructions, usually they're pinned right to the top there, of how to root that phone. Those instructions vary depending on model, and what choices you have for modifying the firmware. In many cases, you can put a more kind of stock Android on it, because Android's what we call an open source operating system. Google publishes the source code and lets anybody download it and use it. It's easy for an interested party, and there's some very sophisticated, smart developers out there, to take that source code, modify it, customize it, make it, you know, sharpen it up, make it sing, modify it in such a way that it can be put on a certain phone, and then offer it. And it's a download. It's a free download, and you reboot the phone, and you can modify the firmware. But as I said, this is a fairly advanced topic in Android phones. It's a fun thing to play with. And if you have an older Android phone that you don't mind bricking, That's the technical term for turning a expensive device into a brick. If you don't mind risking that, and I think if you follow instructions carefully, you won't. Then it's a fun thing to do. And I, of course, used to root my phones all the time and put new firmware on there and stuff. I don't do that. I ain't nobody got time for that anymore. I don't feel the need to do that as much, especially since I'm trying to keep up with all the new phones, let alone root my old phones. But it can be done. Just be very careful about getting exactly the right model. You know, you don't want to modify the Middle Eastern version, the EMEA version of the Samsung Galaxy S5 with firmware designed for Korea. You'll make a hash of it and you risk bricking it. But if you follow the instructions precisely, without any deviation, read it carefully, as if you were making the most careful, you know, birthday cake and you wanted to get it exactly right. You follow that recipe step by step precisely. Don't improvise. Then you'll probably be all right. And sometimes you have to do it a couple of times to get it to take that kind of thing. It's fun to do. But again, Black Diamond tip. It's for advanced Android users. 8888-ASK. Leo, we put all this stuff, and I will put all this stuff, all the information, in our webpage, techguylabs.com, so you can easily refer to it. You don't have to write anything down. It's free. There's no sign-up. I don't want your email address. Keep it to yourself. techguylabs.com. And just go to this show and hour number two, last call, and lots of information there. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Or Canada. And let's see here. Pat in Louisiana, Hornback, Louisiana. Hey, Pat, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. George, you had on earlier, he had mentioned, you know, good products and stuff. Well, I wanted to give you a story of what happened to my son and his iPod.
Yes.
He was in the Army. He still is. In 2009, he was in Iraq. And the vehicle that he was a gunner. They hit an IED.
Oh, dear.
And some shrapnel came up and hit him in his left breast pocket. And that's where his iPod was. And when he was done and everything, he took it out. He turned it on and it worked.
Oh my God. And he's okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's fine.
Is he back home?
Oh yes. He's still in the Army. And,
did he save the iPod with the shrapnel wound?
He did. And then it was stolen out of his vehicle and base.
That's a shame. Cause that's something you put on the mantle saying this iPod saved my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
But wow.
Somebody was going around stealing iPods and other Apple products because Blockbuster was having, not Blockbuster, but it's that game store, GameStop, was having some sort of promotion where they would give them money for those those things.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, because wouldn't that be a great souvenir? I'm thank God he's home, he's safe, he's okay. I'm sure you feel that way. That's a scary thing.
Oh, yes.
Have a son in the line of fire like that. Now, you don't want to get that call. Mom, I was hit by an IED.
Well, we didn't find out about it until he was back home and stuff. And they're not allowed to talk about certain things until it's done and over with. So, yes, he's blessed. And, I'm just thankful to all of our soldiers that are out there doing what they need to do to keep us safe. But I just wanted to put that on there that Apple does make good products. And I was really shocked when he told me, hey, Mom, it's working. And he proved it to me.
It is built like a tank. Especially the older iPods were built like a tank. They were really, really tough. I'm not sure I'd want to use an iPod Nano or one of the new iPod Touches to save your life. But those old iPods, man, they could stop a bullet. Hey, really nice to talk to you, Pat. Thank your son for his service.
You.
Yeah.
I will.
What a great story.
And hey, you've got some great ideas out there, so I'm glad I listened to your show.
I am too. Thank you, Pat. I really appreciate
bye-bye.
It. Wow, what a story. I remember from, the Great War and World War II, people getting saved by a Bible, right? I had a Bible in my breast pocket, bullet hit the Bible, but an iPod? And it still worked? What? I don't think Apple planned for that, but that is a great, great story. Daryl, New Jersey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Daryl.
Hey, Leo. How you doing? Long time listener.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I try to buy all the stuff that you your sponsors are.
Oh, they appreciate that. Thank you.
That Epson Fast Photo I have, I've had it for a while.
Well, what do you think of that?
Digitizing all the old family photos. It's great.
Yeah, it's a scanner designed for one person purpose, which is to take those shoeboxes of photos and to turn them into digital photos. And it does that really, really well. Do you use it for other things now too?
Just the photos for now.
Yeah. I mean, it's really what it's designed to do. Yeah, good.
Yeah. And I'm talking to you on a Pixel 2 XL. And
How is it?
I haven't had any of these problems that everyone's talking about. The thing is great.
Hallelujah.
I've downloaded 8.1, the beta, and it's perfect, knock on wood.
So one of the things, one of my co-hosts, Stacey Higginbotham, has the small Pixel 2, and she had the problem with the squealing and the clicking.
I haven't had that either.
And you haven't had that. And I think that by going to the latest version of Oreo, and you're on a developer version, which isn't out quite yet, but I think that may also be one way to fix all of this. I'm very pleased to hear it because I really was excited about it. I'm waiting because I decided I wanted the black and white with the orange button.
The panda.
Apparently that won't be out till next month, but I'm glad to hear it. So, I also want to recommend this phone because it is the most secure version of Android, and I think Google does a beautiful job with their Android devices.
I agree.
How about the squeeze? Do you like that? So you squeeze it to get the Google Assistant to start up.
The squeeze is good, but maybe they're going to. Well, I don't know if they can change it, but when you squeeze it from an off position, you know, you can talk to the assistant, but the lock screen is still there. Yeah,
that's to protect you, I'm sure.
Definitely.
As it should. This was a problem with some iPhones where you could ask Siri questions like, you know, what's my home phone number? and it would tell you without being unlocked. So I think most of the companies are kind of limiting what can go on until you unlock the phone. That makes sense. Well, hey, it's really, really nice to hear. That's great. This is going to be the show where stuff works. This is a first. So what's your question?
I bought an SSD to replace a rotating drive in an Acer laptop, and it was a Hyper, the Hyper from Kingston, and it came with the bundle and everything.
Very nice SSD. I like it a lot.
It's great, and it's so fast, but the drive that I replaced was a 750 gig, and this one was a 960. I cloned it, and then when I look at the size of the drive, when it's in there, it still reads 750, and I thought maybe there's an easy way to get that other space.
Yeah. So that some cloning software won't do that. This cloning software was a little too accurate. It made the bigger drive smaller to make it exactly the same. So that depends on the cloning software. Some cloning software will say, I see the new drive is bigger, but that doesn't matter. I'm just going to copy what I have from the smaller drive over. Now you can resize the drive. You're on Windows or Mac?
Windows.
So what you'll want to do is on Windows 10.
Windows 10, yeah.
Yeah. Hit the Windows key X at the same time. That opens up that or right-click on the start menu, same thing. You get that special menu, and you're going to go to the System Management console and go to Drive Management, Storage Management. And in there, it's basically a very nice partitioner, and one of the things it can do non-destructively is expand a partition. So assuming that the rest of that drive is unallocated, you should be able to expand into it and use up all the 960.
Okay, great.
Expand your partition. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Leah.
Okay, Daryl. Take care. That's one of the things they've done nicely, I think, on Windows 10. And maybe Windows 7 and 8 had it too. But the System Management console is the more advanced part of it. And it's easy to get into, and it's certainly worth exploring. You just go to your start menu and you right-click on it, and you'll get it's a dark menu, not the tiled menu that you're used to. Actually, you can go directly to Disk Management. You don't have to go to Computer Management. You can go directly to Disk Management, and you'll see the graphical display of what your drives are, what's occupied, and you can use that to, in many cases, non-destructively manage it. It used to be when we played with partitions, those are the logical divisions within a physical drive. Kind of like partitions, like cubicles in your office. You know, you take an office and divide it up with cubicles. You take a hard drive and divide it up with partitions. It used to be moving them around, resizing them was always destructive in Windows. It would delete the contents. That's not what you want, obviously. But now you can expand the partitions. In most cases, depends on the, you know, other situations going on with the drive and so forth. Let's see. You know what? I'm not going to start the next call because we're almost out of time this segment, but Mike is coming up in Norwich, Connecticut. Another SSD question. I love SSDs. This is funny because a lot of attention goes to the new Intel processors or the newest, fastest graphics cards. But probably the single best upgrade you can do to your computer, if you still have a spinning disk, is to put a solid-state drive. Same kind of memory you put in a camera, you know, the flash memory or a USB key. It's a little bit better, and there's some extra circuitry. But, man, that can speed up your performance so much you'll think you have a new computer. Boot up times go down into seconds. Applications load almost instantly. It really is a major improvement putting an SSD in. And they're very reliable these days. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's so scary. Leo Laporte. I love this movie. My wife and I were discussing, is it a Christmas movie or a Halloween movie? It's a Halloween movie, even though it's called The Nightmare Before Christmas. It's a Halloween movie. Oh, I love this song. We watch this every Halloween. Tim Burton's fabulous Nightmare Before Christmas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Michael Cozio, musical director. Appropriate as always, playing the great hits. Let's go to Mike, Norwich, Connecticut. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Leo. Can you hear me pretty good?
I hear you great.
Great. Okay, I don't know if you could call what I have a problem. I've got an SSD drive. It's the Samsung EVO half a terabyte drive.
Love those. I have a dozen of them. They're fabulous drives, yeah.
Oh, it's been great until it failed.
Yeah, well, all drives are great till they fail. Yeah. How old was it when it failed?
Yeah, it's only been a year, so it's okay. Still under warranty.
That's pretty quick, yeah. It shouldn't fail that fast.
Yeah, but I need to image it. And what I've got to back up most of my stuff is what they call a 1 terabyte thumb drive, and I'm not sure if that's something that's just fooling the file allocation table into thinking it's 2 terabytes, but so far I've been able to put a bunch of data on it.
Wait a minute. And you have a 1 terabyte thumb drive that actually has 2 terabytes on it?
Yeah, it shows up as 2 terabytes.
Well, maybe something went wrong at the factory and they mislabeled it.
Oh, I'm happy then.
Yeah, that's interesting. What operating system are you using?
Windows 8.1.
You might go into the disk manager, disk management console, and see what it says, because that'll be probably more accurate in terms of the size. Do you know how to do that? We were just talking about it earlier. You right click on the Windows Start menu and you pick disk management and go in there, and it'll show you a graphical representation of all the mounted drives. If that thumb drive is plugged in, it'll show that. And I think that'll give you an accurate representation of the size. If it still says 2 terabyte, yeah, that's conceivable, right? They make 2 terabyte drives. That's a pretty big thumb drive.
Yeah, but thumb drive. I'm not sure, but I'll check it out.
You know, the thing to be careful about is if you bought it on eBay, there are companies that do mess around with that stuff. They take smaller drives and they mislabel them, maybe even in the firmware. So I'd be careful about that. Do they make 2 terabyte thumb drives? Wow.
I'm wondering if I could back up an image of this failing drive to that.
You should be, yeah. Yeah.
What software do you recommend for that?
There's a lot of choices in the Windows world. If you want to do it while Windows is running, then you're going to need there are drive. The old way of doing this was Norton Ghost, but you had to back out of the operating system and do it from DOS.
Oh boy!
But there are newer ones that you don't have to do with it. So I'm gathering that you want to do it without backing out of Windows. So yeah. I think the one Steve Gibson likes, Steve's listening, I'm sure, and he's going to yell at me, but if I'm not wrong, is called Drive Image XML from Runtime Software. And you can download that for free. I don't know if you'll have to buy it to do the full drive. Usually there's some, you know, tricks involved. There are free choices like CloneZilla that are hard to use. EaseUS also makes a drive imager that's free.
You know, that's another thing. Speaking of Steve Gibson, I bought Spinrite 6 years ago, and I tried to use it on that drive that's failing, and yeah. I can't get the Spinrite to work. I can't even get it to come up with anything, but hey, make a bootable drive.
A bad sign. That usually means that the drive is dead in a deep way. So how are you proposing to copy it?
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It came up on another computer.
Okay, you can see it. Okay.
as an external drive.
Okay, yeah,
yeah,
copy it now. Copy it now. I use a program Steve Gibson used to recommend called Drive Snapshot. That's not free, from a German company. But yeah, try the Drive Image XML. And I think that that's free. Windows does have, they've disabled it in the fall creators update, I'm sad to say, but they did have, and you will still have it in your 8.1, the Windows 7 style backup, which does an image as well. So that's another, you actually have there actually is a tool, and the easiest way to find that is hit the Windows key and type backup. And you'll go into the, you know, I think they, because they knew they were going to phase it out, I think they call it, you know, historic backup or something, Windows 7 backup. But it does a full image backup as well, and I found that to be reliable as well.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, and yeah, maybe back it up to two different drives just in case. How big is the Evo?
Maybe in the 11/42/13 method of backup.
Yes, that's what I do. Yeah, we talked about 3/2/1, but that's far too small for many of us. Yes. Yeah. Make many, 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 many copies. Good for you. Good for you. You won't lose any data that way.
Yeah, hopefully.
And drives are so cheap now. I'm sorry the Evo failed. In fact, the computer I'm looking at has two Evos installed. I have Evos in many of my computers, and they've been very reliable. But, you know, all drives fail. I'm glad it's under warranty. You can get it replaced.
What's the difference between those and the EVO Pro?
Yeah, they make the new Pros. Those are faster. They use a different technology. They're more expensive. Yeah. If you can afford a Pro, get a Pro.
This thing makes my eyes bleed booting up. It's 10
I know.
Under the desktop.
And a Pro is really overkill for most for an older computer because it can't handle all the speed. But it's really more about price than anything else. They use a newer technology.
All right. Pros. I'll give her a shot. Happy Halloween. Hey, by the way, do you know what kind of ghost haunts the chickens?
No, what kind of ghost haunts the chickens?
A poultrygeist.
Okay, that was terrible, and I laughed. I mean, just encouraging him. Thank you, Mike. Happy Halloween.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
It's a dad. This we call a dad joke. Poultrygeist, I like it. I'm going to use that on my kids. Let's see. Kingnan in L.A. Kingnan. Hello, Kingnan.
That's my name. Thank you. Hi, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm good. Is it a good time to talk to you?
Well, I am on the air, but okay, go ahead.
All right.
As long as you don't mind a few people listening in, I guess it'd be a good time. Sure.
Yeah, because I was observing you, like, multitasking here and there, and I was like, is it a good time to talk to you?
People don't know sometimes, but we do offer a video feed of me doing the show. And if you come in the studio, we had some people in the studio earlier. They said, how many screens are you looking at? And I counted them up. It's 12.
Oh, geez. Okay. But I see you have a Mac on your table, I believe, and then there's an iPad.
There's a Mac, there's an iPad, there's an iPhone, there's a Samsung Galaxy Note 8, there's a Surface laptop so I can do the Windows. My main screen, my 30-inch screen, is a Debian Linux. I have every operating system that you could possibly. But I found that was necessary because, you know, people ask me Windows questions. I need to fire up the Windows machine to say, let me see what that menu is. I forgot.
Yeah.
So, hey, I'll tell you what. Hang on a second. It is now no longer a good time to talk. I mean, we have to take a break at the bottom of the hour, but I will get to your call in a minute or two. 8888 Ask Leo. We do have a couple of lines open, another half hour to go. If you want to follow along, you can join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. And don't forget the website. Everything's there, including all the links I mentioned. And it's free. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I knew he was going to say that right when I started talking. 8888-ASK. Leo, the phone number, last half hour of the show for this week. And I was talking, to Kingnan in Los Angeles. What can I do for you today?
Oh, by the way, Leo, my name is actually Kingnan, which the first letter sounds like a hi-hat. Like
Ching, like yeah. Ching. Yeah, I know that. I studied Chinese in college. I saw the Q and I said,
you do?
That's
Chi. Oh, really?
That's Ch. Yeah, Kingnan.
Yeah, like remember how Philip, when he was announcing the iPhone 10 on stage, he said there's a Qi technology
Qi.
Like iPhone 10.
Same
right,
thing, right?
Yeah.
QI.
Same thing. It's, yep. Yeah, it started with QI.
Yep.
It started with Q. And most of the people in America tend to spell like U after it. I was talking to a lady earlier, and then she spelled like Q-U-I-N-G, but it's like a Q-I-N-G.
Queen. Yeah, no, Qingnan. I know that. Yeah. It's pinyin. Yeah, it's pinyin. Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
It's pinyin. You know that.
Oh, sure. We used to, when I was, okay. I'll tell you how long ago I studied Chinese. We were using Wade Giles still, which was terrible. That's when we thought really? That Beijing was Peking.
Yeah.
We've learned.
I mean, there's a dish still called Peking duck. It wasn't changed so far. Like, it's
really?
Called Beijing fried. I think it's toast duck or something like that.
Oh, how funny.
But people still call it Peking duck.
Peking duck. Peking duck is my favorite duck. I love it. I'll never forget having Peking duck in Beijing.
Yeah.
It was the best thing I ever had, and I've been seeking it ever since. But that's not about, that's not what you called about.
Yeah.
What did you call about?
Duck, yeah. So earlier I was listening to your Windows Weekly with Mary Jo Foley, and there was another gentleman, I forget his name.
Paul Thurrott. It's our Windows-focused podcast, yeah.
Yes, I'm super geeking out about the release of Microsoft Surface Book 2.
Yes.
Which comes in two varieties. And then I looked a little bit in depth about it, and I realized there are a few technical terms that I just could not wrap my head around.
All right. So yeah. I have the original Surface Book. It was an interesting device, Microsoft's kind of their first laptop, although because it's a convertible, they don't call it a laptop. The idea was there's a button you press on the keyboard that releases the screen, and you pop it off. The screen's got its own battery and can continue to operate as a tablet, or you can flip it around and fold it over. And as a result, the hinge is kind of strange looking. It's like a clothespin. But apparently it sold well enough to have them update it, and just a month ago they announced a new Surface Book, which is even faster and better. So what are the technical, more likely the jargon terms they're using that you're wondering about?
So I have a few. I remember on the show you mentioned there was a 8650U processor. I remember you mentioned that. I took note of it. And then there's also like it can pump up to 4.2 max turbo. So I'm just a little bit confused about it.
Yeah, no, you're not alone, because Intel has confused the world mightily with its processor names and designations. Okay. So, for instance, there's the latest generation of processors that Intel makes are called Coffee Lake. They call them eighth generation processors, except there are some Kaby Lake that are also called eighth generation processors, which makes no sense at all. Kaby Lake is really the seventh generation, but Intel's... You know, it's a lot of this is just marketing, and what Intel unfortunately tends to do is baffle people.
Yeah.
If you Google Intel roadmap, you can find the slide that kind of explains what's going on. But my strongest suggestion is to go to a site called AnandTech, AnandTech. They review in great depth the Intel processors, the new generations, what's pro and con, and they'll tell you more about what the 8650 does, which is the kind of I guess it's the middle and high end Surface Books compared to the older processor. But I'll be honest with you, in my opinion, when you're buying a laptop, it probably doesn't pay to put an i7 in it. Now, so the 8650 is an i7. And I've made the mistake of buying i7s just because, well, it's better than an i5, right? I want the best. Yeah. In fact, my Surface Book was an i7 until I did some research and found out that because of the thermal constraints in laptops, they get hot and there's not a lot of room for cooling in there. i7s are rarely allowed to run at full speed. And they won't, so they won't tell you. You know, they'll tell you the spec that Intel says for those chips, but what they won't tell you is it'll never run that fast. So you can often overbuy, and you know, of course, it's more complicated than merely saying, "Oh, get an i5, not an i7." Some i7s will run, and you know, this 8650 has four processors; it's quad core. And it does get up to a top speed of 4.2 gigahertz in theory. Mm-hmm. But almost certainly, if you were running it in a laptop, It would never get that fast.
Okay.
So now that may, you know, Intel trying to solve that, of course, and they're trying to make these cooler, and perhaps in time that will be incorrect advice. But it's my and at this point, I would really love to get a processor guy on, and he can tell me. I'd like to hear if I buy a top of the line i7 processor for my laptop, let's say the 8650U, is it going to run at full speed ever? It's been my experience, it doesn't. So get the, in other words, unless you really know that you're going to need this in every respect, I'd get the i5, save some money, and maybe get a bigger, get the 15-inch instead of the 13, or get more RAM.
Yeah, I like 15-inch.
Yeah. Unfortunately, one of the things I don't like about the way Microsoft sells laptops is they don't, you know, Dell and Lenovo will let you configure all sorts of things. The way Microsoft just puts them in bins. So If you get the i5, you can't get the larger hard drive, or you can't get as much RAM. If you want more RAM, you're going to have to get a i7, that kind of thing.
Oh, that's fun too.
I don't like that. I think you need 16 gigs. It looks like they do sell. Let's see if they sell an i5. No, see, the i5 is only 8 gigs. See, the 16 gigs of RAM would do more for you than the i7 processor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it's you know, and there's a big difference. So the i5, 13.5-inch i5.
That was my alarm, sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. It was $1,499. But that's only 8 gigs of RAM and a 256-gig hard drive. What if you wanted 16 gigs of RAM and a 512 hard drive? Well, you're going to spend $1,000 more.
Oh, wow.
I feel like that's unfortunate. Now the graphics card is better, and that does make a difference. You're gonna get a 1050 NVIDIA card instead of the Intel based graphics. Do you play the game on this laptop?
Well, I mean, I do play Grand Theft Auto, and currently I'm playing it on the boot camp on my Mac.
Oh, this will be much better than that.
Okay.
Boot camp does not perform very well. So yeah, you might want to look at. I hate to say it, but you might want to look at the i7, just because, not because you want the i7, mm-hmm. but because you want the GTX 1050 graphics card, a little more RAM, and it will make a big difference in Grand Theft Auto.
Is it called GTX, or I heard somebody saying GeForce or something? Is there a difference between these two? Are they all graphic cards?
So there is a big difference. So the lower end Surface Books 2s use the Intel motherboard based graphics, the graphics that comes with the chip, the Iris graphics.
Okay.
And the higher end ones have a dedicated GPU. It's actually in the keyboard. So as soon as you detach the tablet, you lose that. It's funny that now that you mention it, this is a kind of a complicated thing to buy, the way Microsoft sets this up. I would say if you're gaming, you're going to want to get the higher end, not the i7. You're going to have to get an i7 because it's the only way they sell it, but the higher end ones with the dedicated GPU. That's the GeForce GTX 1050. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, that's kind of unfortunate. You'll get worse battery life because of that GPU. You really won't want to detach the tablet if you're going to use gaming. I swear, it's just this is one of the reasons I prefer to buy Lenovo ThinkPads or Dells, because uh-huh. they let you configure it. You can say, no, I want more RAM, but I don't want an i7. There's a little more configuration capability.
Oh, okay.
And Microsoft, I think, overcharges a little bit. So spec out the Surface Book you like. It's a beautiful screen. You can't deny that. And then go to the Lenovo ThinkPad. Don't get the low-end Lenovos. Go to get the ThinkPad, like the X1s or the T's or the X's, and spec the same machine out and see if, you know, you can get a little bit more like as you want it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Lenovos are fantastic. Do you want the detachable screen? Is that important?
Well, I mean, I remember Mr. Thurrott, your colleague, the one you...
Paul Thurrott, yeah.
Paul Thurrott, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, he bought a ThinkPad X1 Carbon. He loves it.
Yeah, and then he mentioned that the detachable screen was such an, you know,
nobody uses it. I never detached it.
I do that.
Yeah, and, I mean, if you think you would, then you're going to want to look for a convertible.
Yeah,
but the Lenovo that we have, that I have, the Yoga, I have the ThinkPad X1 Yoga, second generation, folds over so that the keys are underneath and it's like a tablet. It goes into tent mode as well as normal laptop mode. I find that much more useful.
Oh, okay. And actually, just, you know, based off of the model, you know, Microsoft Surface Book Pro, Surface Book 2, based off of that model, I actually came up with an idea of the, you know, rotatable laptop. I actually draw it on my iPad. I wonder if I can send it to you so you get an idea of what I'm talking about.
I'm going to guess, because they do make a laptop where once you open it, you can twist the screen around and close it again. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. You can just rotate it horizontally.
Yep.
And then flip it back. That way you don't have to stain the keyboard like you would otherwise do on the convertible.
That's a really good way to do it.
Yeah.
Yep. The way the Lenovo does it is a little weird. It sucks the keys up inside the laptop when you flip it around.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it has little – so the keys never touch the table, but it's a little weird. But there are companies that make these flippable screens as well. I think – does Dell do it? Yeah, I think Dell does it, Lou MM says. Anything mechanical like that, though, is risky, right? And that's why I think Microsoft made a mistake with the Surface Book. The original Surface Book had all sorts of problems because of the detachable screen that they didn't solve for months. It took about 8 months to get the firmware right so that it didn't cause problems. It had all sorts of problems with that detachable screen. They fixed those, I should say. The new one doesn't have that problem. But it's just – you always have to consider when you do weird mechanical things like this, how well is it going to wear? Are you ever going to use it? You're paying extra for it, and it's going to reduce reliability. If you're not going to use it, then it's a bad idea. If you don't use it all the time, it's a bad idea. And I find I never did, and that's what Paul was saying as well. We never detach the screens. We never do.
Yeah.
Never do. Flip them around, maybe. My Lenovo I use in tent mode, so that if you're watching a movie, you tent it, and that makes it really nice for watching a movie. That's about the only time I ever do that.
Well, do you think in the future maybe they're going to put out some convertible, like for Microsoft?
Yes, I absolutely
really?
Do. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This was them. Remember, they're brand new, and this is a new business for them. They've never made computers before. So I think they wanted to kind of be different. And that's why they did the Surface Book. But sometimes different's not better. Hey, nice to talk to you, Qingnan. Thank you. Appreciate the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Happy Halloween, everybody. Hope you're enjoying your Halloween weekend. Charisse, Lancaster, California. You're next. Hi, Charisse.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, thanks for hanging on. I'm sorry it took so long to get to you. I appreciate your patience.
It's okay. I didn't know it was my turn. But anyway,
surprise!
I wanted to tell
you. You're on the radio.
I was dancing to the Thriller.
Yeah, me too. Were you doing the dance?
I was doing the dance. I wanted to tell you, I called a couple of months ago, I guess it was, and I wanted to get the Note Fan Edition because they said I wasn't going to be able to trade in Note 4 to the Note 8.
You wanted a Note 7. The Fan Edition, which is a reconditioned Galaxy Note 7. By the way, Note 8, not much better than the Note 7. So that's, you know, if you can do it, that's not a bad thing to do.
Well, and so, but what happened was I kept calling and calling, and I'm pleased to report that Samsung exchanged my older Note 4, which still worked fine when I turned it in because I had an OtterBox cover on it. And originally, the half-off trade only applied to Note 5 and newer Samsung phones. But I called and talked to several service reps, and finally I was told that they relaxed the policy to allow for my situation.
What great news! That's fantastic.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. So I got it for half off. So I paid like $475, $500 with the tax and all that. $530, I think it was with the tax.
And how long have you had your Note 8 now?
So I've had it for 6 weeks.
Wow. And do you like it?
I love it, except it's not blue.
Oh, you wanted blue. Yeah, blue was a very limited, I don't think they even sold it in the U.S., as I remember.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's so frustrating because they sold it in Note 7. So
Put a blue Otter box on it. You'll never notice.
No, it doesn't look the same. It's not that pretty.
But wait a minute. Does any of the blue peek out from the Otter box?
Well, I bought no, it doesn't.
No.
I didn't have an OtterBox for my Note 7, though. I had a clear case.
Yeah, I use a clear case because I want it to show through, too. I have a little clear Spigen, S-P-I-G-E-N, case that I use on my Note 8, just to protect.
Yeah, and I have the E-Blazon, same thing, clear, and I got the gray, the light purplish gray weird color.
That's pretty good. Now you got a little purple phone.
Yeah, it's not really purple.
It's purplish. Purple
cast. Okay, I'll take that. But I think the battery life is really, really, really good.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
It goes all day, and it charges in like 30 minutes to a full charge.
Isn't that awesome? So do you use the wireless charger, or do you use a plug-in charger?
I use both.
Yeah, I love wireless.
The wireless works faster, I think.
Yeah. I'm glad that, they have a special fast charge for the wireless that works quite well.
Yep.
I use it all the time.
I just wanted to say, since today is the day of giving companies credit when they do something right, I'm so thoroughly pleased and happy that Samsung went ahead and honored, my exchange.
I am so pleased, Charisse, and thank you. And we might make this a new thing on the show, the Happy Tech Guy Show, the I Love My Company Show.
Yes,
we should, because we really should praise companies when they do well. We're certainly quick to blame them when they don't. So I'm glad that they did that. I'm really glad you got your 8, and it's better in many ways than the 7, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. The screen is beautiful.
Oh, there's no screen.
Beautiful.
Here's the good news. There won't be anybody to come even close this year. Not anybody at all. This is an amazing screen.
And
unlike Apple, there's no notch cut out of the top. So
I don't even know, since I'm not an Apple user anymore, I don't really know what that means. What do you mean the notch?
Well, Apple's using the same, probably exactly the same screen as on the Note 8 or something. It's certainly from Samsung, so it'll be very similar. But what they elected to do is to go all the way to the top. On our Note 8s, they stop just short of the camera and the speaker, right? So that it's normal screen. But Apple decided to go all the way to the top and then just cut a notch in the screen to make room for the camera and the speaker. That's is right. Ooh is exactly the right. Like, what? What are you thinking? So
I use my headphone jack every day. So
yeah,
I'm glad.
That's another thing. Why Apple, if Samsung can make a top of the line phone and fit in all these features, including a stylus, and still have a headphone jack, what do you mean you don't have enough room for a headphone jack? I don't understand.
Yeah.
How could that be? Now, the Samsung phone is taller. In fact, it's kind of weirdly tall and skinny. That takes a little getting used to. It's a 2:1 aspect ratio. But what that means is you get more real estate, but you can still hold it in your hand, one hand.
Yeah, it looks ridiculously large, but you get used to it. It's normal for me.
Yeah, you do. You're getting used to it. Yeah. I don't know if I'll hate the notch. I just think it's a weird aesthetic decision. I don't think it's as bad a decision as getting rid of the headphone jack. That is incomprehensible. And again, you got to use Samsung as an example and say, well, they didn't have to get rid of it. Google's doing the same thing. Why get rid of this headphone jack? I just don't understand it.
Going back to Samsung because of that.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're happy with your Note 8. And so far, no Note 8 explosions, I'm happy to say.
It doesn't get warm.
It doesn't get warm at all. Yeah. And it's funny because they did put a smaller battery in to avoid that problem they had with the Note 7. And yet, battery life is excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find that too. I'm often, at the end of the day, still at 70 or 80%.
Okay.
Hey, thank you, Charisse.
One quick short little question about Windows, because I did get a Surface Book 2, and I got that new update. Has anybody heard anything bad about that update? It's finishing right now.
No, you're going to like it. The one thing that I'm curious what people are doing, you're talking about the Fall Creators Update, which is going out to everybody now. It is Windows is now a little bit of a different beast, where they're not going to do another version of Windows, Windows 11. They're just going to update Windows 10 every twice a year, usually, sometimes three times a year. This is the big fall update. The only thing I noticed is it adds a little icon in your system tray, a people icon. And I think most people just delete that and go on, go on with their life. There are a few new features, but I don't think it's anything. I think mostly it's under the hood for this.
Okay.
Enjoy your new. That's nice. You got the new Surface Book too. You recommend it?
Oh no, I didn't get the new one.
Oh, okay.
I got the old one, okay. But I got the expensive one. I did. I went all bells and whistles.
You kind of have to. I did that too because you need more RAM. You need it. You need the specs. You may never use the speed of the i7, but you need the RAM.
Right, but I do detach my screen because I use it for teaching, and I just use the to walk around the class, and
that's
I also use it to. I'm a librarian, so I use it to walk around and look things up in the.
Now I get it. That makes a lot of sense for you. So, and that's the question anybody should ask before they look at a Surface Book: am I going to detach the screen? If you're not, then don't. But if you are, and you obviously do, it's a good choice.
Yep, it works for me.
Thanks, Charisse. Really nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day. And what's your costume going to be on Tuesday in the library?
Oh, I'm one of those people that don't celebrate.
Good, me neither. Our costume is looking normal.
I am serving Halloween cupcakes, though.
Oh, good. That's all anybody could ever ask.
Yep, that's it.
Thanks, Charisse. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our Halloween music director. Kim Schaffer, our band leader. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks to you most of all for joining us. I'm the Tech Guy. We'll see you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.